is the John Murphy Show on Buffalo Bills Radio.
McCoy at the 10, at the 5, into the end zone. Touchdown! What a great run. Fires down the middle. It is intercepted by Micah Hyde. Intercepted. Tre Day. Tre'Davious White. He's in trouble. He is sacked. Jordan Poyer came unblocked. It is Jerry Hughes who brings him down. What a big play there. Poy, much to the right. Outrunning everybody. 10, 5. Touchdown! Touchdown! Touchdown, Buffalo!
Live from One Bills Drive, this is the John Murphy Show, presented by Napa Auto Parts.
Welcome to the John Murphy Show. I'm Steve Tasker on this February day here in Buffalo, and co-hosting today, John Murphy's on vacation. I'm with Donald Jones. Donald, how you doing, man?
I'm good. Welcome home to the warm Buffalo.
It is warm Buffalo. You had a fur hat on coming in today to work. It ain't that warm, but it's not Minneapolis cold.
Right. For me, it's cold. And then it was snowing. I was watching the news this morning, and I see it's supposed to snow like 6 to 8 inches or something like that. I'm like, come on, man. I'm tired of it actually melting. It'll get up to 45. It'll melt, and then all of a sudden you get another 8 inches. I'm like, ah.
You look like Nanook of the North coming in today. I'm wearing jogging shoes and a little pullover. Come on, man. It ain't that bad. It's not Minneapolis bad. We were telling you that Minneapolis was dangerous cold.
You said what, 20 below?
It was so bad.
And that wasn't wind chill. That was actually
so
20 below.
So
that's
bad.
Ridiculous. I talked to Naaman Roosevelt, who plays up in Saskatchewan. And he's like, man, it's like 30 below.
That's like Mars. That's like
that.
900 below.
Mars?
Yeah. Steve Tasker along with Donald Jones. We're sitting in for Murph today. He's on vacation. Good for him. We're going to talk about a lot of stuff. If you want to get in on it, you can. 803-0550. And outside Buffalo, it's toll-free, 888-552-550. And you can join us on Twitter, at John Murphy Show. We're not going to do a Twitter poll today, by the way, because we're newbies. And I'm hosting today, so I didn't want the extra huge amount of pressure having a Twitter poll. Plus, I couldn't think of a good question. So
that's really what it was.
It is what it was, just between us. So we're talking about everything. We're going to talk about league-wide stuff today, too. We're going to go all down through the quarterback thing and all these different teams that are doing. Also, Sean, what's the head coach? The head coach of the Colts now, the offensive
Josh McDaniels.
Sean McDaniels. Josh McDaniels is now the head coach of the Indianapolis Colts. The other guy, Matt Patricia, is now the head coach of the Detroit Lions.
Yeah.
And I think that is it for head coaching vacancies.
Yeah,
everybody's got a coach now, and they're ready to move forward.
Everybody has a coach and ready to move forward. We'll see now who ends up offensive and defensive coordinators for the Patriots. That's going
like to
be a big – I think people underestimate how important those positions are. Now, Tom Brady – on offense, runs
he is
the
your
show.
Coordinator.
Yeah, he's your coordinator.
Yeah.
And I mean, Bill Belichick has been one to promote from within. That's traditionally what he does. I don't see them going outside because, look, we're not changing these systems. This is what we run. And Tom Brady is going to be like, I'm not changing the system. I don't know. Whoever you hire better be ready to run this system.
Now, I've heard that Greg Schiano is going to – I'm having trouble with first names today.
It's all good.
Bill. no. Greg Schiano is in the running for the defensive coordinator that was vacated by Matt Patricia in New England. Now, that's a name that people know, and it's amazing to me when you go through and who they get these guys, who has relationships.
Oh, yeah.
Bill Belichick has a relationship with Schiano with Greg Schiano that promotes him, and he may come in as do the – But I want to know who the offensive coordinator is going to be.
I mean, that's important. I want to know who the offensive coordinator is going to be. I think the defensive coordinator is important, and Greg Schiano, they have that relationship. His son went to Rutgers. Bill Belichick's son went to Rutgers. They've drafted multiple players from Rutgers every year, Devin McCourty, Harmon, Logan Thomas, all of those boys from Rutgers. Every year they have somebody. But the offensive coordinator is going to be important because they have to find somebody who Tom Brady – I don't want to say gets along with, but yeah, he has to get along with this.
You got to tolerate him anyway.
Right.
Yeah. Also, some of the coming up at 1 o'clock, James Lofton, former Buffalo Bill Hall of Fame wide receiver, is going to come up. He's also one of the Hall of Fame voters that was in for the draft class or the new inductee class that was a pretty stellar group this year.
That's a very good, heavy duty group.
Everybody
wants to see T.O. and what he's going to say. I mean, he's a firecracker. You never know what he's going to say. I saw him tweet. Jason Whitlock, Jason Whitlock tweeted out after he was inducted, he tweeted out some slick comment, and it was like, congratulations on getting into the Hall of Fame, yada, yada, yada. And then he was like, be a great teammate to your fellow Hall of Famers. And T.O. responds, and he's like, kick rocks. It was the funniest thing ever. Like, kick rocks with bare foots.
Oh, my gosh. Well, you got to be a good guy, in my opinion.
You do.
Otherwise, you're not a first ballot Hall of Famer. You're a second ballot Hall of Famer.
Was Randy Moss a good guy his entire career?
Listen, in his for teammates and guys on the team, he was never a problem. Guys liked him. Yeah. He was great. He was great in Minnesota. Mm-hmm. Guys liked him really well. Now, he had that thing coming out of Marshall where there was a big thing at a bowling alley, whatever.
Yeah.
They kind of but you know what? I was in production meetings with the guy. I talked to teammates of his. He was never a problem in New England. I mean, if you're a problem in New England, you're kicked to the curb pretty quick.
Yeah.
He was always well liked by his teammates. In fact, I was in a production meeting with me, Gus Johnson, our production crew, and we were doing a game in L.A. when he was with the Raiders at the end of his career.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And he could not have been nicer. Gus wanted to take a picture of him for his kid, Gus's kid, and we never did that. Gus never did that ever. And he asked Randy Moss for a picture. And Randy couldn't have been nicer. In fact, I was laughing. The picture, Randy Moss got a big smile hugging Gus.
Yeah.
Gus is stoic. Like, Gus is the one that's out been – like, Gus is the one that, like, doesn't want to do it.
Yeah.
Randy Moss was great. But he is a Hall of Famer. He's a first ballot Hall of Famer. And for all the stuff he gets, he was never a bad guy.
You know, T.O. gets a lot of stuff for being a bad guy, I guess, to people in the media. And you would talk to a lot of his teammates that say, man, he was a great teammate. You know, I don't know.
Not all of them. You didn't talk to any Philly guys.
That's why I said a lot of them. Not
Philly
all of
guys.
Them.
Listen, remember what happened
to
Philly.
This dude is terrible.
Oh, man, he blew that team up.
This dude is terrible. But Randy Moss, my thing, it came down to, and we're going to talk to James Lofton about this, my thing, you couldn't put in one over the other. You just couldn't.
Man, listen, they were both phenomenal.
They were the two best receivers of that time period.
They're the only two guys in the modern era since the 70s or 80s who could be mentioned in the same conversation with Jerry Rice.
Right.
Jerry put all the numbers way out of mm-hmm. reach. He had Joe Montana for all those years, and then by the luck of the draw, Steve
Young.
Young. Mm-hmm. I mean, he had two Hall of Famers back-to-back who had long, illustrious careers,
right.
And he spanned all of them.
Mm-hmm.
That's, you know, that's where you get those numbers. Not that he wasn't great, because he was.
Right.
But that's, you know, he put those numbers at wide receiver completely out of reach. Even in a throwing league where you got guys like Marvin Harrison
mm-hmm.
and T.Y. Hilton, and you go down the list, Anquan Boldin.
Yeah.
You go down the list, all these guys that had really long careers. Steve Smith, who was really the only receiver who had an actual shot 1 year to be an MVP of the NFL, mm-hmm. let alone offensive MVP. He couldn't touch those numbers. So
Larry Fitzgerald.
These two guys, yeah. Larry Fitzgerald, a great mm-hmm. example. He's not even in that conversation with the numbers.
Right.
So, you know, you've got T.O. and Randy Moss, who there's no doubt, you know, it was like, you know, rubber stamp those guys to get in. And then T.O. doesn't get in last year, and that was no doubt a nod to the problems that he had off the field.
I mean, Randy Moss, my son, who loves football, who plays football, he says things like, oh, man, he just got Moss. And I'm like, What are you talking about? You have no. You're 7 years old. You have no clue what you're even talking about.
Be
but
quiet.
Randy Moss changed the game in that way, where even kids still who are babies are like, "Man, he just got mossed."
Yeah,
it's the funniest thing.
The run they had in Minnesota with Dante Culpepper was unlike we've seen in a long time, and we may never see it again. But nevertheless, and then the run he had in New England was equally as impressive.
The
they almost went. 19-0 or 20-0.
Yep, and lost to the Giants.
And lost to the Giants in the Super Bowl. But yeah, Donald Jones, along with Steve Tasker, we're in for Murph today. He's on vacation. You can give us a call 803-0550 and outside Buffalo 888-550-2550. So let's talk. We got all this stuff going on. We were going back and looking. Free agency's coming. The league is over. The season is over. The league year ends February 15th. That's when all the contracts run out. That's mm-hmm. when all that stuff stops. But March 14th is when the league year begins for next year. And then February 20th is when teams can franchise and transition, all that. And then we got like March 14th is the, March 6th?
March
16th. March 16th, right?
Right, is the
March
first
16th
day of
free agency.
Right.
So everybody's like, well, let me just remind you, the Bills last year on the first day of free agency, they signed DeMarco, the fullback, mm-hmm. who played all year, Vlad Dukas, an offensive lineman who made the team, Steven Hauschka, Micah Hyde, and Jordan Poyer.
Right.
That's a pretty good day.
All of those dudes
you think about that,
were starters.
And we didn't know then what we know now. It's like you'd be fist pumping.
What?
For those five guys.
And if you think back, Bills fans who have been, I mean, just crying for anything here. And every year you want to make the big splash free agency moves. And I remember thinking when they were making these moves, like, man, they're not making any splash moves.
Yeah.
And I don't expect any splash moves this year either. You know, they're going to find some key guys that fit into what they want to do. And we'll see what they do in terms of their own free agents and bringing those guys back. But they're going to find some key guys that fit their systems. But I don't think they're going to go out here and break the bank trying to bring in anybody.
But you know, too, when they do bring guys in, they're going to be their type of guys.
Right.
Just like Poyer and DeMarco and Micah Hyde were and Hauschka.
Mm-hmm.
They're going to bring their type of guys in, which is kind of fun to a certain extent. But you know and I know, when you're in the locker room stuff, they bring those guys in and all of a sudden you got to say goodbye to somebody else.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of guys on this roster that were on those one-year deals. Hey, you got to earn it. Let's see what you got. And those guys, and a lot of those guys performed extremely well. It's going to be interesting to see how they handle guys like Ramon Humber and guys like that around the roster.
Yeah.
Because there's going to be a lot of guys who played really well for the club but were on one-year deals.
I think first you have to look at once the league year ends, once they get into those cap casualties, because they don't have much. And we see we have, what, Kyle, Jordan Matthews, Sharice Wright, Brandon Tate, Tolbert, Humber, Tavares Cadet, who I feel like was coming into his own as a very good player.
A lot of people were like, I like this kid.
Yeah, I like this kid. Deontay Thompson, Preston Brown is going to be a big E.J. Gaines. You know, I mean, you have Chantrell Henderson. So you have some names that you could say, oof, man, you need to bring a good amount of those guys back. Don't know. Some of those guys might get money somewhere else and end up somewhere else.
Some of them
else.
Will. Preston Brown's going to be a hot commodity at inside linebacker. Tavares Cadet is a guy that kind of opened some eyes. And that's a running – we've always talked about in the last, I don't know, 10 years or so, the running back position has been devalued. Mm-hmm. And now, not so much. I mean, you talk about Alvin Kamara down in New Orleans.
What?
All of a sudden, it's like, wow, maybe we can make some hay with a good running back. And, of course, the best player on the Buffalo Bills for the last two or three years has been LeSean McCoy.
I mean, look how important. And for me, it's not just having one running back. And the Bills, they truly did have LeSean McCoy, and he could do everything for you. But if you look at teams across the league, the trend has been to have running back by committee. You need to have a good backup running back.
Yeah.
You look at the Super Bowl champs now. They brought in LeGarrette Blount, Ajayi, and they drafted the kid Clement, who had a very good game as well. You know, so you need to have guys who can really do different things for you and not have to rely just on LeSean McCoy, who is 30 years old and going to be turning 31 years old. He's getting up there now. He has a lot of miles on those tires. So you need to make sure that you have some guys in the wing. So ultimately what it comes down to is we talk about free agency. You have all of those free agents who you got to figure out if you want to bring them back. But first, they don't have much room to even play with right now.
Right.
So there's going to be some guys who are under contract that might get released or might have their contracts come down a little bit so that they can make some space to bring in some talent onto this roster.
Yeah, I agree. And I think Tyrod heads that list. I mean, the quarterback spot is, he's due the big bonus if he's on the roster after March, and they're going to have to make a decision there. But I think also with the running back thing, it's getting to the point where all these great defenses around the league rotate their defensive line. And the reason I bring that up in talking about running backs is that's what they're doing with running backs.
Right.
They're keeping a fresh guy in there.
Right.
They're giving them stuff they do. And they're also – a lot of teams, they have a couple of different philosophies. One, you get a back like LeSean McCoy. And then the Bills did this. They used Tolbert as a complement, and they're completely different.
Yeah.
Other teams, like with Mark Ingram and Alvin Kamara,
Alvin Kamara,
New Orleans, they're the same guy. They can do a lot of the same things. Now, they do, there's some little differences, but they're like, so they get a fresh guy in there, and they can run whatever they want.
Whatever they want.
Can put them both in at the same time.
Right.
Or they can split them out, or they can, So they get the same guy at running back, two different guys who have the same skill set or vote close to it. People like the Bills, they'll have a different type of guy that they plug in there as well. And basically, it just gives you different tools. It gives your offensive coordinator a different set of plays to call. But I think that's no question. It was a different philosophy for the Bills this year with Mike Tolbert, who a lot of people were like, what? He's a fullback. But it worked. They had some good stuff. And Tolbert, I can think of it, coming in there, snapping off an 8-yard run up between the guards. It helped him.
There were a lot of instances with Tolbert where people were like, man, why do you keep going outside with Tolbert instead of going inside. And, and there were some times where he caught a pass out of the backfield, and it was like, man, there's Tolbert right there. I like having guys who can do everything. I like versatile players, right? So your starting running back, LeSean McCoy, can do everything. Your backup needs to be able to do everything, you know, so that you don't have it where – if your backup comes in, oh, you know he's going downhill type of thing. You know,
I agree.
You need to make sure that everything looks the same. I was taught as a receiver, make everything look the same. The way you stem somebody, the way you release off the line of scrimmage. When you're scheming up and you're designing your offense around your players and you're bringing in guys to fit your scheme, I feel like you need to have guys who can do multiple things so that it doesn't look one way when one guy comes in. It's just predictable.
I agree. And here's the thing, too. When you see LeSean go out there, it's like, man, there is nothing he can't do.
Right.
I mean, as a running he picks up blitzes. He blocks really well. He runs a route really well. He can go between the tackles. You know, there's nothing he can't do, and there's nothing he can't do really well.
Right.
So when you put somebody else in there where you think, well, he ain't going to do that or that. You know what I mean?
Right.
I mean, and LeSean is kind of a hard comparison because, you know, Mike Tolbert ain't going to do the stuff he does.
Right.
But and not too many guys are. And it's easy to say, well, give me three LeSean McCoys. Well, yeah, they don't exist.
They don't exist.
Right. So there's the problem. But also, one of the things that on the other side of that, let me just take it the other strategic way. When you have a guy like Mike Tolbert in, and you bring him in off the bench and place LeSean McCoy, everybody's saying, well, now it's a bad exchange. Not necessarily. Because the defense, if you're bringing in Mike Tolbert, they'll switch up their personnel. And if you can get the defense to switch up their personnel when you want them to by putting in another player, now you get a matchup on the outside, you know, with Kelvin Benjamin. Now they switch out their personnel, and now you got a matchup against the tight end and O'Leary, and you got Charles Clay, and the defensive personnel is different in the passing game because you got Mike Tolbert in as a fullback or as a running back. So it forces the defense to change their defensive philosophy when you put a guy like Tolbert in, and that gives the offense the benefit because then the defense becomes predictable.
Yeah.
And you know who's going to be on who, and you can pick your spot. That's the other side of that coin. That, like, well, why can't you just have, you know, a bunch of guys the same way? Well, you may want to get a defensive switch for yourself at some point, and that's why you have a Tolbert or somebody. And you only got so many spots. You can't, like, have LeSean McCoy, Mike Tolbert, you know, Alvin Kamara, you know, and Cadet was a good one. I mean, you know, so you can have as many guys as you can, but you run out of spots. Plus, then all of a sudden you don't have three special teams guys that cover kicks, and now, you know, you're giving up 45-yard kick returns and stuff.
You know, we're talking about all of these different positions in free agency. But ultimately, we know here in Buffalo, it's going to come down to, number one, the decision at Tyrod Taylor.
Oh, yeah.
With Tyrod Taylor and what they want to do with him. And then where do they go at quarterback? If he's not here, where do you go at quarterback? If he is here, are you going to draft one in the first round? That's what everybody wants to know. And I know we're going to get the tweets where you guys are talking about everything. Nothing matters until you get a quarterback, until you get a franchise.
That's the way it is. I get it. I hear that. But we're going to talk about all this. And that was why we're here today. We're going to talk about the Kirk Cousins. We're going to talk about the new catch rule everybody's talking about. They're going to change that. I'd love to see. It don't matter what they change it to. I'm telling you, as long as you go into film review, there's going to be 100 instances where they're going to question why you wrote the rule the way you did, no matter how you write it.
Right.
No matter how you write the rule, there's going to be 100 instances where the rule comes into question.
Yeah.
It's just the way it's going to be if you're going to start doing that. Also, we're going to talk about Andrew Luck. Alex Smith, who would you rather have, Alex Smith or Jimmy Garoppolo? Who's going to have more success this year? Pat Mahomes, Jimmy Garoppolo, Deshaun Watson, Deshaun Kaiser, Mitch Trubisky, Jared Goff. Is he going to be all these quarterbacks around the league that are both brand new, and also the veterans. Is Eli going to fall off the face of the earth this year?
He might.
I mean, he had a good Super Bowl ad. I will give him that. But
he fell off the face of the earth last year.
That's a tough call. Yeah, right. That's a tough call. Which veteran QB is going to reach the end of the line? I'm pretty sure 12 up and, you know, the GOAT's still going to be playing for the Patriots.
Oh, yeah. He's not going out like that.
So we're going to talk about all of that. We're on the John Murphy Show. I'm Steve Tasker along with Donald Jones. Let's talk a little bit. I don't want to get into the quarterbacks because we're going to go down the rabbit hole of quarterback conversation here in this show. And once we go down, you're never going to see us for 3 days. We can't get out because it goes on and on and on with the quarterbacks.
Teams that have quarterbacks, what do you talk about then at that point? Like if
a
franchise quarterback, we had Tom Brady here, what would we be talking about?
I don't know.
I mean, there's nothing else to talk about because you have a franchise quarterback.
By the end of this show, they're going to be throwing dirt on you and me because we're going to be so deep into the quarterback hole, we can't get out. But anyway, let's talk about something we can talk about. The catch rule. The commissioner has said it. Everybody's talking about it.
Mm-hmm.
and it's becoming obvious that even owners are talking about it in open interviews at the Super Bowl. Everybody's talking about how they're going to talk, you know, they're going to change it. Well, what are they going to change it to? I mean, I thought they got both those catches in the Super Bowl right. Both catches by Philly should have been touchdowns. I like both calls. The one in the deep end zone off the left side down at the back of the end zone where the guy went out of bounds. And then, of course, the Zach Ertz touchdown where the guy took four steps and dove across and the ball comes. And I know people in Pittsburgh are having a heart attack over that catch. The whole shooting match in the AFC should have gone through Pittsburgh.
Yeah.
With the Jesse James touchdown against the Patriots that wasn't a touchdown. And then Zach Ertz goes in like that in a Super Bowl, and that's like, oh, no, that was a good catch. Wow.
The crazy thing is, as your buddy Bruce Smith is calling you, the crazy thing is we talked about that last week, and we said, I hope that this Super Bowl does not come down to a controversial play, a controversial catch, as we were talking about the catch rule last week.
It was identical.
And it was like
– it was identical to the Jesse James touchdown that wasn't, that they reversed. It was identical.
That's crazy.
It was identical.
Now, Jesse James, what did he take, like two steps or something like that? Zach Ertz actually took maybe
three
or four.
They're saying he took four steps. He took three steps.
Jesse
James took, what, 2.5 steps?
Yeah.
And became a runner. They both – come on, man. It was identical. If you were in the yard – if you were in the yard with Cousin Billy, Uncle Vinny, and you know, Grandpa Joe – and Grandpa Joe goes into the end zone at one end, and they call it a touchdown. And Cousin Vinny goes in the end zone at the other end. That had to be a touchdown, too. The Jesse James catch and the Zach Ertz catch are identical. One was a touchdown, and one wasn't.
Are those all your family members that you're in the yard?
I just made those up.
Oh, all right, cool. I mean, it was identical. It's crazy. I mean, Jesse James took, what, like you said, like 2.5 steps. That play was identical. And that play, to me, when it happened, it was like, that is a touchdown. You play receiver.
Touchdown.
I play receiver.
The Jesse James play was a touchdown.
That was a touchdown. And just like the one – so did they change in the Super Bowl? Did they change the rule and say, look, guys, we can't
– they changed the call because what they said about the Zach Ertz touchdown in the Super Bowl was that he became a runner.
It was clear that he became
a runner.
It
was clear he became a runner. He reached the ball over. And I go back, Jesse James did the same thing. Jesse James
he
did
reached
the
ball over.
He took a couple steps and dove in and reached the ball over the end zone.
It's crazy. I mean,
it's maddening is what it is. Frustrating. And I know Pittsburgh.
I thought that one was going to get overturned.
You know they're going to make T-shirts about that.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I thought the Zach Ertz play was going to be overturned. And
for me, too. It
was clear. I'm like, that's a touchdown right there. But they're going to overturn
this thing.
Because
it's the
Jesse James play. And it's like they're going to overturn this thing. And the Patriots are going to end up winning this game. And that would have just been horrible for everybody. And I remember looking on my Twitter feed, and everybody is like, if they – reverse his call, I'm done watching the NFL.
Oh, Dan Rooney's throwing his coffee at the TV right there. He's in his suite. If he's at the Super Bowl.
He's throwing his TV.
Oh, he's throwing the TV out the window.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. I'd be sorry. Whatever. What are you going to do? We got to hear about it because we're going to change the catch rule, and then we're going to have to dissect it. And I'm telling you right now, they're going to change the catch rule, and there's going to be 50 instances during the course of the season where you're going to question why they made the rule the way they did.
So, I mean, Murph is under the impression, and I kind of agree with him that just in terms of the catch rule, man, you need to do away with the replay. You don't need to look at a million different angles because you're going to question everything if you go, and I'm talking about the refs that go under the hood. You need to do away with that and just let the guy on the field, if I see the ball move, whatever I call, because the refs are standing right there on the play.
Yeah, I get it. And I don't like taking it away from him either, but here's the thing. If you're going to do the replay, this slowing it down and just show it replay, show it in live
and
action.
Live.
If it looks good, it looks good.
Mm-hmm.
Just go with it. We all know, particularly the guys in our position, particularly the guys of the officiating crews and all of that and the guys back in New York, just show it live action. Forget this frame by frame dissection of it because once you go down that, you never get there.
Yeah.
You never reach the end of that. You'll never be able to discern exactly what it is. And plus, the ball moved a little bit, and you just watch it at live action. The guy caught it, go. If the ball pops out after you get out of the end zone, okay, all right, maybe that's not a catch. But he's got.
I mean, if that's the case, then that one would probably not be for my money. If you catch the ball and you reach, and you cross the plane. Now, you take two steps and you cross the plane, that is a touchdown, because any other time when you are a runner, as soon as the ball crosses the plane, it's a touchdown. So right. There should be no, well, you got to survive the ground and all of that stuff. If you're running and you cross the plane, that's a touchdown. That's it. And he, in the Super Bowl, just like Jesse James did, when he caught it, they made a football move. They ran and reached out and crossed the plane. And then they hit the ground and the ball pops out.
We started, and this is Steve Tasker along with Donald Jones. We're in for John Murphy today. He's on vacation. We're going. You can tell we started out talking. Now we're yelling at each other. We both agree that's how bad it is. We're going to be here all day. We're on the John Murphy Show. This is presented by Napa. We're going to be here all day. Give us a call. Let me just get this right. Look at this.
He's been saying that he won.
This is like the Dead Sea Scrolls. This card with the toss has been around since the 1950s. Give us a phone, 803-0550. Don't call yet because we're going to go to a break right now. 803-0550. And outside Buffalo, it's 888-552-550. I'm Steve Tasker along with Donald Jones. We're talking about the Buffalo Bills. The league year's up. The free agency period begins on the 14th. We're going to be talking about all of that, plus all the quarterbacks for all around the league. So give us a call. But for right now, we're going to take a break. This is the John Murphy Show.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show.
This is the John Murphy Show. Steve Tasker along with Donald Jones. John's on vacation. This is presented by Napa Auto Parts. If you want to get on the show, call in at 803-0550. And outside Buffalo, it's toll-free 1-888-552-550 or at John Murphy Show on Twitter.
It's funny because you were showing those two
little
pieces
of paper. This is like an ancient text.
And, he's always talking about how he needs to get new ones and then laminate them. But it's funny because he puts these paper clips on those, and it's like, what are you clipping it to?
What do you clip them?
Merv Chew.
They look like they're 400 years old. I can't. John's been around a while. I will say that. We're going to talk. I'm Steve Tasker along with Donald Jones. We're talking about this quarterback thing, and we've been talking about the catch rule, and we agree. On every aspect of the catch rule about what's happening, and we end up yelling at each other because we're so crazy. What's happened with? I don't want to mention the Jesse James and Zach Ertz catch again. It just doesn't make sense.
It doesn't make sense, and the reason that we're going back and forth at each other is because we both play receiver, and you know when you catch a ball as a receiver, you're like, come on, man, it moved a centimeter. Then you're going to tell me it's not a catch now? I caught that ball. What are you talking about? Yeah. Because you get to go back and look at this thing at 30 different angles from around the stadium, and you could tell me that's not a catch. That's baloney.
See, here's the thing. The competition committee, and I've heard about conversations that happen in there when all these guys get in there, and they're all – most of them are coaches. And the problem is this. Coaches don't like unpredictability. And they get in there, and what happens is it happened when they put the tuck rule in. Mm-hmm. It happened when this catch rule thing coming in. What they don't want is random fumbles. So when the tuck rule came in where the quarterback was trying to pull it back in and then it came loose, they said, make that an incomplete pass. We don't want those sack strip fumbles. That's a game wrecker.
Yeah.
Now the same thing with the catch rule. If the ball moves – we don't want it to be a catch and then go down and then have it come out and be a cheap fumble. Mm-hmm. Well, dude, make the guy's got to keep control of it. I mean, so that's where they get down. They start going down these rabbit holes and making this so that it makes their job easier as coaches don't get these freaky fumbles.
If you're on a competition committee and you're a coach, you're thinking about something that happened to you in a game.
That's right.
You're like, wait. That's happened to me, so I need to make sure that we implement this so that it doesn't happen to me again and it makes my job easier. Yeah. We don't lose a game because of something like this. I don't even feel like that's even right. I mean, they need to how many of them are coaches on the competition committee? Is it made up of all coaches?
I don't even know how many people are on that. It could be a cast of thousands for all I know, but I don't. But it's a pretty prestigious committee. Hmm. And I know, like, Bill Belichick is on it. There's a couple of general managers that are on it as well.
Okay.
But it's for the fans and for the people who watch it, it's the most important committee out there.
You know, people, fans, especially here in Western New York, but around the league, would say, of course Bill Belichick is on the competition committee. Of
course. What's that?
I said fans would say, of course Bill Belichick is on the competition committee. Yeah. They get all the calls. What are we talking about right now?
Yeah, but be that as it may, you know, all those guys are, you know, you got your self-interest in all, and they always think back of instances, and to their credit, they do see the ripple effect. So if you're going to change this rule, well, wait a minute now, because this is going to happen, this is going to happen, this is going to happen. And, yeah, you know, they kind of try and think through it. But until they get into the heat of battle, nobody really knows how that's going to come down and how it's going to shake out.
When does this stuff go into effect? We're talking about the league has come out. Roger Goodell has come out and said, you know, Super Bowl week, that they want to look at that. But when are the owners' meetings and all of this stuff going to take
place?
Well,
that's when it
all happens.
Owner meetings, and then there's also the guys get together away from the committee. Mm-hmm. Like, they'll go to the draft. They'll have, like, six guys get together.
A
couple of guys will talk. Even while they're sitting out there waiting for the next drill at the – you know, they'll talk. And relationships, like when Jim Harbaugh was in the league, Jim and John would talk. And then, you know, and John's got a relationship with Bill Belichick, and they got, you know – all these guys, Jim McKay or John McKay, the former general manager, they all have relationships and they talk about this stuff all the time. The question is, you know, what's it going to look like? And I'll tell you this too, don't belittle this. This sounds like a little bit of a nod towards marketing, and it is. When this thing comes down, they change this catch rule and they do all of this stuff, one thing only matters. Does it present well? And people will kill me for saying this.
Does it
make the game look good on TV?
Are
the fans going to say, you know what, that's right, okay, I'm ready? Because that's basically the philosophy of the entire league all the time. What do the fans want? What's going to make them comfortable? What's going to make them want to watch it? What's going to make them feel good about the decisions that have to be made on the field? And they want to get all that right. They don't have that right with the catch rule. People are really angry about the catch rule. And they're
going
to fix it,
though. I just don't know where
you
go
big,
with it.
Yeah.
Because nothing is going to make everybody happy. So where do you go with the catch rule? Because there's always going to be some fans that are like, you know what, this is terrible. But truly, do you stop watching the game because of a catch rule or something like that? I mean, ultimately, with high-definition TV and all that stuff, people are watching anyway. The thirst for football is ridiculous. And then with so many cameras in the stadium, you're always going to see so many different angles anyway. People are going to be upset because even if you said we're going to put this at real time, even if you said we want to do away with instant replay, as a fan watching the game on TV, you're still going to see 15 different angles of a catch or no catch.
Yep.
And so you're going to say, oh, man, as a ref, you suck. How did you miss that call?
Yeah.
You know, so you can't please everybody.
It's an industry that is loaded with negativity. I mean, the official – I mean, God, I made my living hating those guys.
Did you?
And it was true.
Since you were in Pop Warner.
Oh, my gosh. All right, we're on the John Murphy Show. Steve Tasker hosting along alongside Donald Jones today. Murph is on vacation. We're going to take a call. I hope I can do this right. I'm going to click. This is listening on hold. How do I click it? Right there, right?
Yep.
All right, here we go. Go ahead. You're on the John Murphy Show. I'm not taking him. I'm taking the other guy. Tom in West Seneca. Go ahead.
My man, Tom.
Steve, Dan, thanks a lot for having me. Appreciate it. About the catch rule, it doesn't need revamping. I think the problem is in the replay booth. These guys are trying to be clever, and they overanalyze and end up screwing up. Secondly, well, I got to throw it in here. Quarterback for Buffalo, we need a quarterback. I'm satisfied with the team as a whole, but we need a quarterback, and I hope they can make a deal for Baker Mayfield with whomever drafts him. And also, I never understood this. This bothers me. Why should a team be penalized and lose three timeouts because they were being thrifty in the first half? Let them be able to bank their timeouts. And my last comment is that hit that Gronk put on White in a playoff game, regular season game. During the regular season, let the team that was offended, let them pick the game that this player suspended from. I think that would be fair. And Don, we talked about this before. Don says it too. He should have been ejected from the game because that was so flagrant. It made me sick.
Yeah, I can imagine. I agree with you on a lot of that, Tom. And we were really grieved. here in Buffalo because, you know, of what happened with the Gronkowski hit on Tre'Davious White. And I agree, that was a – and even Bill Belichick told Sean McDermott right after the game, say, hey, man, that was wrong. Yeah. And it's not the word he used. But he knew. And I think he knew then in the back of his mind that it was going to cost Gronkowski at least a game.
Yeah.
He was going to get and as far as Baker Mayfield, pick your guy because it's a coin flip. Whether it's Josh Allen, Baker Mayfield, Josh Rosen, or the kid from USC, and I can't think of his name now.
Sam Darnold.
If either one of those, if there's five great quarterbacks or five guys that are going to get drafted this year, I'm serious, 2.5 of them are going to be really good,
yeah,
and the other 2.5 are going to be bad.
That's just the way it works. About Baker Mayfield, and I said this last year about Deshaun Watson, and a lot of teams passed on Deshaun Watson. Deshaun Watson and everybody leading up to the draft was, you know, they're breaking down and analyzing the way he throws the ball and all of this stuff. He hasn't played in a pro-style system, all of that stuff, right? And I kept on saying, this dude is a winner, though. He has won games. You can tell the passion that he plays with. And you always hear about quarterbacks, it's more than just on the field. You have to have it up in your mind, in your heart. You have to have that it factor. Mm-hmm. Deshaun Watson had that. He had that competitive edge about him. Baker Mayfield is a guy, and everybody talks about the things that he's done on the field, you know, stuff that we've all seen.
Yeah, a little bit off his rocker.
His rocker. But I think I compare him to a guy like Philip Rivers, who you see the passion on the field. You can see him jawing back and forth, which you don't typically see from quarterbacks, but you can just tell this kid has a lot of passion in playing this game. I mean, he didn't have to play in the Senior Bowl. He truly didn't have to play in the Senior Bowl, but he wanted to show and prove people. He has that chip on his shoulder that you guys are saying that I'm not one of the top guys where I'm going to go and play in the Senior Bowl, even though I just won the Heisman Trophy. I just had a great season at Oklahoma. I had a great game in the playoff game. I don't really need to go into playing that game, but I'm going to do it anyway. So you can see the passion that this kid has. You can see it on the field. You can see it when he's talking about playing football. And to me, he has that it factor. The size, all of that stuff, you can get down to the measurables and all that. I get all of that stuff. But ultimately, The kid is a winner to me.
He might be, and I'll tell you that you may be right. He may be Johnny Manziel.
He could be Johnny,
you know, because you saw that guy doing that too. But you know what? You're right about Deshaun Watson. He had that same kind of it factor, a guy that was – it wasn't too big for him. And I covered the Houston Texans early in the season this year and then later on in the season as well. Let me tell you something. Deshaun Watson, they got their guy.
Yeah.
He can go. They were scoring 30 to 35 points a game through 6 or 7 weeks of the season. And they had a top five defense. They were headed. Then, you know, obviously he gets hurt, and now it all goes south for them.
They
the whole
the
season bottom. And then, of course, J.J. Watt gets hurt, and then they had another, you know, Cushing is out for a while. So it all came apart for Houston this season. Didn't have anything to do with Bill O'Brien and the job he did. But but I asked him after Deshaun Watson had sat for a few weeks and they were playing their fifth quarterback or whoever it was.
Whoever that was.
And I said, okay, so going forward, though, you're pretty sure you've got, you know, he is absolutely there. He's our guy. And he was adamant. He goes, oh, yeah. He's all of that in a bag of chips. So they got their guy. And like Carson Wentz in Philly, they got their guy. He's hurt, but he's coming back, and he's going to be their guy going forward. But you're right. All the intangibles, Baker Mayfield, the guy at Oklahoma, you have a hard time seeing that kid being wide-eyed walking out there. You know, he's gonna own it.
Right. The only thing you have to worry about is that whole Johnny Manziel.
Yeah, and his size too. I mean,
you definitely have to worry about that.
He's over 6 feet. He's 6'5". I think that's what the big number coming out of the combine was. Does his height start with a 6? And it did.
And it started with
it
a 6.
It did.
So he's my height. I'm 6'5". I mean, ultimately, we've seen quarterbacks in this league get it done at that height. You've seen Drew Brees do it. You've seen Russell Wilson do it. Even Deshaun Watson is like only 6'1", 6'2". He's not 6'5", or anything like that, you know, where people talk about you got to be able to see over these linemen who are 6'4", 6'5". No, you just got to be able to see through them. And you have to be able to trust your eyes when you're looking through them. Or you have to be able to move the pocket. And I think Baker Mayfield will be a good one. And I know teams will probably pass him up because of the things that you've seen him do, and you worry about that Johnny Manziel side of him, and you worry about him off the field. I just think the kid is passionate about the game. He's going to come in here into this league, and he's going to be a good one in a few years.
Yeah, I'll tell you what, he's a competitor as well. Let's take one more call. You're with Steve Tasker and Donald Jones on the John Murphy Show. Let's take a call from Nick in Wheatfield. Nick, go ahead.
Hey, good afternoon, gentlemen.
What's up?
Steve, I'd like to say one thing. I think there was one person lacking in induction for the Hall of Fame, and his name was Steve Tasker. Enough said.
That's enough said. Go ahead, Nick. Thanks, I appreciate it. But, yeah, let's not hold our breath. We got things to do.
I know that, Steve. I'm just telling you, all right?
I appreciate it.
I'm glad you did. Listen, on that catch, I think that's exactly what the catch rule should be, just like it was in the Super Bowl. Those catches resembled exactly what happened to Kevin Benjamin and Charles Clay when we played New England, and also the Pittsburgh receiver, and they were called no catch.
Right.
I really thought was ridiculous, okay?
Yeah, see, I agree. And I think they did get it right in the Super Bowl. I think we're on record both agreeing with the way they called those. But the problem is they got it right in the biggest game of the year, but they didn't get it right in all those games leading up to it. And I think that's the problem. Am I right, Nick?
Absolutely, that's the problem. And that's got to be correct. That's all I want to say about that. Regarding the quarterback situation, very quickly, I know people will shoot me for saying this, but that's okay. I'm an old combat Marine officer, so I'm used to getting shot at.
You can say whatever you want, Nick.
The Bills should be able, personally, if they traded their two draft choices, number ones, to the New York Giants for the number two, we could get one of those two good quarterbacks, and I am a Mayfield supporter. Believe me, I am. The kid plays well.
Yeah.
And I went to school for Southwest Conference way back in the 60s, Steve, and I was on a team for number one in the nation, so I kind of know my ball a little bit. And I think this kid's going to be really great. And the only other thing on the quarterback, I think people are forgetting Nate Peterman, and I really don't think they should. He had a bad game. But, Steve, do you remember that Miami game that Jim Kelly had five interceptions? So don't tell me because he had five interceptions, he's terrible. And, unfortunately, he got hurt with the concussion protocol, because, personally, I would have played him through the rest of the year. If we made the playoffs, great. If we didn't, great. At least we know what the kid has and what he could handle.
All right.
Okay, enough said.
Awesome, Nick. I appreciate it, man. And that's a good call. I appreciate the call, Nick. And he's right. I mean, the Baker Mayfield thing for players, and Nick, I mean, he played back in the 50s and 60s. He knows what you're talking about. You got a guy that you can rally around.
Right.
And that's what Baker Mayfield brings. I mean, he may be a young kid. He may have whatever deficiencies he has and experience he has or what kind of offense he ran. He's a guy people rally around, just like Deshaun Watson improved he was for the Houston Texans, and other guys have done it over the past. A lot of guys love that. And this catch rule going around, I think they did get it right in the Super Bowl, and he agreed with me there as well. But, you know, the quarterback situation here in Buffalo is going to be topic number one.
That's topic number
until
one.
And I'm with him again. I like Nate Peterman as well. I've watched the guy practice. I know why they made the switch early in the season or midway through the season to give him a shot. He blew up. It blew up in their face. Absolutely no question about it. It wasn't all his fault. But you had to know the guy wasn't going to come in and light it up. Nobody does.
Especially against that defensive line that they have out in L.A. I mean, he brought up one thing about trading up to number two. It's very hard to trade up to number two from 2021.
Yeah.
Hard to do.
They're going to ask about it, no question. I mean, the Bills are going to seek that out. They did it last year. They traded a couple of times. So it could happen.
It could definitely happen, but you got to look at the Giants situation. I mean, they brought back Gettleman, the new GM, has said he wants Eli Manning back to start this year. But you have to understand that they will be drafting a quarterback, and that they are sitting in the prime spot to get a quarterback. So, yeah, I don't see them trading out of that spot, especially not trading all the way back to 2021.
Yeah, you're right. All right, we'll talk more about this as we get into this show. This is the John Murphy Show presented by Napa Auto Parts from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show.
And with Steve Tasker and Donald Jones, John is on vacation, presented by Napa Auto Parts from One Bills Drive. This is Buffalo Bills Radio. We were talking about the catch rule. We were talking about quarterbacks. We were talking about Baker Mayfield. We're talking about free agency coming up and what the Bills are going to do. Now we're at the end of that last segment. We were starting to talk about the draft and what's going to happen. Listen, for me, never forget all the mock drafts that you're going to hear about. Don't even listen to them, because there's going to be some movement at the top of this draft that's going to throw everything out of whack. Nobody's going to be able to know. You can bet teams are going to try and trade up for the Giants spot, for the Cleveland second spot. Mm-hmm. There's all kinds of movement, and it's going to be crazy. We're here with John Donald Jones. We're going to have James Lofton on the show at 1 o'clock coming up in just a few minutes. He's going to be on the Subway Fresh Take hotline with us, calling in. And we missed him at the Super Bowl. I didn't even get to say hi. See, I've known him for 25 years.
He works Westwood One still?
He does some Westwood One work and all of that, and we're good friends, but I didn't even lay eyes on him. He's like the one guy in all of football I didn't see at the Super Bowl this last week, because everybody was there.
Everybody was there. A lot of people. Kevin Hart. Who had his fun. But, I mean, yeah, everybody was there, and you guys cranked out a lot, though. I mean, you got a lot of interviews done.
We did.
Radio Row, for those who can only imagine, I mean, there are so many – all of the teams are sitting around with their own little shows.
Every sports show around the country is there.
Is there. So all of the big networks, all of that stuff, and then you just have people walking through.
And by saying there, we mean like right next to each other. It's like it's group.
You can't even reach out. You reach out, you're touching.
Yeah, it's like a crowded cafeteria is what it is, and everybody's at their own little table with their own little. Yeah.
You guys were in a food court too, so.
Which wasn't all bad.
I'm sure it wasn't.
It wasn't as roomy as you'd like it to be, because you couldn't walk around outside you couldn't walk around inside Radio Row because the tables were so close together, and then outside it was just hundreds of people out there walking around, and then, you know, shows from everywhere were there, and it was kind of crowded at that point.
But you watched the game back home.
I came home Friday night, yeah.
And put on your onesie?
And put on my little pajamas with the feet in them, and pajamas put my feet up. No, we had guests over, we had friends, we had a little party. I say that because it felt like that. I was nice and comfortable.
Now, when you have guests over, because for me, our producer, Jay Harris, actually invited me over, but I felt like if I went over his house, he was just going to talk to me the entire time.
Can't have that. Listen, I spent the week in Minneapolis with him.
And he was talking to you? I mean, that's how it happens, you know? I don't know what his deal is. But, no, I don't.
It's like
I typically don't like to go to – and he wasn't having a party. But typically, like, even when I go back home, I typically don't like to go to Super Bowl parties, because everybody wants to ask me questions. Everybody's like, hey, man, what'd you see there? And I'm like, I'm watching a game just like you watching a game. I really don't want to talk about this. I work and get paid to talk about football all day. I don't want to come home and have to talk to you and break down the game to you.
See, I'm just the opposite. I just had family over.
Yeah.
You know, so I had it's like 10 or 12 people, you know. My son's in-laws and some of them who came over. Nobody wants to ask me anything. They're like, hey, you could care less what I say. Shut up, Dad. You know. You don't know.
You don't know anything.
Yeah.
You're like, all
right. So it was better for me.
I only play and covered the game for 25 years, but I don't know.
That was my story. I'll tell you, you mentioned Kevin Hart. We're going to take a break in just a minute, but how about the – because here's the thing, and we were telling stories at the end. You get to the Super Bowl, and the Super Bowl's over, and they pull that podium. And we've all seen it. The podium comes out, and there's some people up on the podium, the owner, the owner's wife, the head coach, the quarterback, the MVP of the game, the lead announcer for the game. And let me tell you something, that's about it.
Yeah.
You can't get on that podium. No, and I mean nobody gets on that podium.
Doesn't
I don't care
who
it don't matter who you are.
Yeah.
You do not get on the podium. Nobody can. No, they won't let you. You will. I mean, there's big dude security, serious stiff arms at the bottom of those steps. Over the years, in my experience, there's been a lot of people who have really tried to bum rush that podium to get up there. From players to stars. We saw Kevin Hart. He wanted to get up there. I mean, everybody wants to be up on it, and they won't let you.
There's
just a handful of people, and it is really, really kind of funny. See, look at the big guy. See? That guy is serious. He says, no, you ain't getting up there. And look, Kevin Hart can't believe he can't get up there. He cannot believe he can't get up there. We're watching the replay of that. And you can see there's only like six people up there. So there's plenty of room.
But look how small he is compared to security.
Yeah. Look, even Daryl Green ain't a big guy. And Daryl Green's like, hey, bro, hey, no. You ain't getting get out of my way. See this? I got the trophy. I'm walking up like nothing. You can't.
You can't.
It is, and I mean, it is serious.
Kevin should have grabbed the trophy and took off. Just grabbed it and took off.
Just
Kevin Hart, like, there was a video of him with the team and all of the guys kind of gathered around Kevin, and they're like, oh, because, you know, you're an athlete, but you meet somebody like Kevin Hart.
It's cool. It's fun.
And, you know, for those of you who don't know, Kevin Hart is from Philly, you know, so he's a big fan of the Eagles. He's huge, down there on
hugely,
the field.
And he's a
you
hugely know, successful celebrity comedian, movie star. He was in Jumanji just recently. Yeah. And he's
a top comedian.
He's
right
a star.
Now.
There's no question.
A superstar, A-list superstar, big fan of the Eagles. It's, first of all, it's hard to even be down there on the field after the Super Bowl. And that's one thing to be down there. But he's trying to get up on the podium. He looks like a baby compared to the security guard.
Listen, he ain't gonna strong arm his way on. That's for sure. And you notice the guy that some of you may have seen in our viewers, we saw the replay. The guy they got at the bottom of those stairs.
Yeah.
He ain't no little man. he's a big dude. Serious dude who got no sense of humor.
No sense of humor.
Yeah, and
bro.
And I've seen over the course of the years, everybody wants to get up there and everybody wants to do it. And I told you this story. I was on the sidelines of the Super Bowl, I think it's 42, the Colts and the Bears. So there's, you know, the Bears hadn't been in it since 85, and mm-hmm. you know, so it was kind of one of those things on the sideline. It's pouring rain, and I'm standing down there on the sidelines, and this guy next to me is getting this, like, a black garbage bag, mm-hmm. and I'm looking. I kind of recognize. And I'm standing there, and he's standing next to me, and he goes, "Hey, how's it going?" I go, "Yeah, good." And I look at him. It's Billy Joel. Mm-hmm. He sang the national anthem. It's like late in the fourth quarter. He didn't want to. He's like hanging out on the sideline, which is a no-no. Then I'm watching, and they got the sideline camera, and the guy's going all the way up and down. You know, and I do Monday Night Football even today, so they've got the camera is hardwired. And they've got like 500 feet of cable, so the guy can go end to end without. And he's got like three guys on the side that don't do anything except handle his
cable. Mm-hmm.
All right, that's all they do. It's because he's running, trying to catch action and mm-hmm. running, and he's got to have his camera on all the time, and he's got to have a shot. So he'll run around behind the bench and run up, and he doesn't want to have to jerk his cable drag that thing around. So he's got literally three guys that do nothing but keep that cable clear for him. So late in the game, I'm looking over, and one of the guys dragging the cable, I'm looking at him. It's like it's Jim Belushi, another movie star.
Yeah.
And he's in, you know, he's been on movie sets and done TV and stuff, so he knows that nobody's going to touch a cable guy. So that's all he did. He just got down there somehow and started grabbing cable and just holding it.
Just so he can be down
Just so he could be down there. So when the Bears, if they won the Super Bowl, he'd be on the field with, you know, people do crazy stuff. Crazy stuff.
And these are stars.
And they're stars. Oh, my gosh, it's huge. They can't get enough of it.
Amazing.
Yeah, Steve Tasker along with Donald Jones on the John Murphy Show. John's on vacation this week, presented by Napa Auto Parts. We're going to be back with James Lofton just after the top of the hour. This is the Buffalo Bills Radio Network.
The John Murphy Show on Buffalo Bills Radio.
McCoy at the 10, at the 5, into the end zone. Touchdown! What a great run! Fires down the middle. It is intercepted by Micah Hyde. Intercepted! Tre Day! Tre'Davious White! He's in trouble. He is sacked. Jordan Poyer came unblocked. It is Jerry Hughes who brings him down. What a big play there! McCoy cuts to the right. Outrunning everybody. 10, 5, touchdown! Touchdown! Touchdown, Buffalo!
Live from One Bills Drive, this is the John Murphy Show, presented by Napa Auto Parts.
Back with Steve Tasker and Donald Jones. We're going to bring James Lofton in on the Subway Fresh Take Hotline in just a minute. We're talking about all the quarterback stuff going on, not only with the Buffalo Bills, but around the league. We're also talking about the catch rule. We're talking about the Super Bowl and some of the stuff that went on mm-hmm. after the Super Bowl and during the Super Bowl. And, you know, you talk about how this season – and I'm really anxious to get James on because for those of you who don't know, there are, I think, 48 Hall of Fame voters, and James Lofton is one of them. There are two former players that are Hall of Fame voters that actually have a vote, that sit in the room with the debate, that they have a conversation. They're in on the conversation with all the writers and media people who are in that. And the two guys that are in that are James Lofton and Dan Fouts, the former San Diego Charger quarterback. And those two guys, from what I've heard, have, you know, they send out and they talk to other Hall of Famers, obviously. And they find out what those guys think and who they think are you know, great contributors. Like this year was, you know, Bobby Bethard and a couple of others that are going to escape me right now. But it's nice, I think, that they give those older players, the former players, a chance to be heard and at least have some input.
The crazy thing is they only have two of them. So you have to wonder if at some point they want to add more.
Right now we're going to take a call, and we're going to take James Loftner on the Subway Fresh Take Hotline. James, thanks so much for joining us here with Steve Tasker and Donald Jones. I'm so sorry, James, that I missed you completely in Minneapolis. How was your trip?
It was, like everyone is saying, it was a little cooler than what we normally associate with being at a Super Bowl, but it's still a fabulous weekend.
Yeah, tell me about it. Were you there strictly as the Hall of Fame guy, or were you working for some Westwood One? You did some local radio, or what was your role there? What all did you have going on?
I had a little bit of work. I have a show on Sirius Radio, the NFL Blitz. I did that on Thursday. On Friday, I hosted the Merlin Olsen Luncheon, and then on Saturday, I had my duties as a Hall of Fame selector.
Tell me about that. I mean, you're one of the two guys. It's you and Dan Fouts. Do I have that right?
Right.
So tell me about it. Give me a little rundown of how that went and some of the conversations you might be able to share with us.
And I heard you guys talking about it a little bit, but there are 48 selectors. Mm-hmm. And so we all know that there are 32 teams, and at one time there was a selector per team, and now there are a couple of at-large selectors. It's always interesting, obviously, because we are discussing the fates of the 15 guys who are up for induction into the Pro Football Hall of Fame. But to go even a little further back than that, they always talk about the history of how many players at a certain position are in. I think there are like 13 centers that are in,
right,
out of the 300-plus players and contributors that are in, and how few strong safeties are in. Mm. And obviously, Steve, you know how few pure special teamers are in. That number
right.
is still at zero.
Right.
and then they got to talking about history when voters would vote to keep out guys because they didn't want other guys in. And some of that started to happen when there was the merger between the NFL, which was the old guys in the quote superior league, and the AFL. And so now you're going, okay, who do we let in? And if you don't let our guy in, we won't let your guy in. So there had been a lot of that going on. And I don't see it as contentious like that anymore. It's interesting. We started at over 120. We went down to 25, then we went to 15. And when you look at that list of 25, you look at it and go, wow.
Yeah.
We're only going to pick five of these guys.
Right, right.
And trying to do that is a daunting task. And I always walk out of the room, and I'm happy for what we've done, but I'm also just a little, not bewildered, but a little disappointed that we couldn't get everybody in. Because
right.
there are so many deserving players.
James, what's it like for you being in the room as a former player? You're sitting in the room with, and obviously you work in the media now, but you were a player. So you look at
right.
this thing from a different angle, a different point of view than the rest of the guys or people who are in the room who are, they have always been media members. So what's it like for you as one of only two guys that actually played the game sitting in there having to vote these guys in?
Well, it's similar to what I first went through when I got to coach in the NFL. And I got to coach for, I think, 7 or 8 years. And we're sitting in a personnel meeting. And, you know, we're going around, we're talking about the players at our position, we're ranking the players on the team 1 through 60, which is, believe it or not, which is something that you do about every 2 weeks. And you do it a lot during the off season. And I remember a coach talking about how lazy somebody was, how the guy couldn't learn, that we didn't think we needed him. And so I had gone from being on a team and having teammates that you depend on, teammates that you'll battle with, teammates that you'll go through thick and thin with, and here this guy's just trashing this player. And then he says this statement. He says, the guy doesn't love football.
Mm.
And I bristled back and I thought, man, everybody loves football. And fast forward a couple years later, and I remember sitting in the room and I'm thinking, yeah, I'm looking at the 12 receivers I got on my roster, and I'm going, I got a couple of guys here who don't love football.
Yeah.
And so your perspective changes a little bit. And when you're in this room with the other 46 selectors, you realize that football is just as much a part of their life as the guys who are playing it.
Yeah, we're sorry. Go ahead, James.
Yeah, they might have some different opinions and different things like that, and they acknowledge from time to time that they haven't played it, but they do study the game.
Right. Yeah. We're with James Lofton on the John Murphy Show, Steve Tasker along with Donald Jones, and we're speaking with James Lofton, Hall of Fame wide receiver, former Buffalo Bill, and also one of the selectors for the Pro Football Hall of Fame. James, talk a little bit about maybe the specifics. It seems like this, Donald and I were talking about it earlier in the show. What a phenomenal group that you guys put in this year. I mean, these are all, you know, kind of rubber stamp guys. And
right.
Talk a little bit about the guy that's the most intriguing that everybody speaks about is Terrell Owens. And you got Terrell Owens and Randy Moss. Both those guys are absolutely phenomenal players. You got four guys there, Ray Lewis, Randy Moss, Terrell Owens, and Brian Urlacher. Now, Terrell Owens was shut out last year, but the other three are all first-time guys that are eligible, and they all got in, you know, as well they should. Tell me a little bit about the Terrell Owens saga. There was a lot of attention given to him last year when he was shut out for a number of reasons. What's your take on that whole situation?
Well, let me back up. So we start with that list of 15, mm-hmm. and at 7 a.m. we start discussions, and we go by positions. And this year it just so happened that, and they kind of just luck of the draw who you go through first. So we went offensive line. I think we went defensive back. Then we went the one running back, Edgerrin James. I know I'm going to leave off a position here. And I think then we went to linebackers, and then we did the wide receivers last.
Mm-hmm.
And when we had done the wide receivers the year before, they were kind of in the middle, and it got a little sticky, to say the least, as we're talking about Terrell Owens and should he be in, should he not be in, and obviously he was not put in. I'll go back again to that first ballot that we have with 15 guys on it. So we've gone through the discussions that we started at 7 o'clock, and I remember thinking we need to be finished with this around 2:15, and we really were about 2:15. So all you do now is you just put a little check mark by the box next to the 10 that you want. So there's not a 80% approval that needs to pass on. You're just picking 10 out of the 15. So you do that. You hand it back in, and I remember, you know, in my notes I put, okay, these are the 10 that I selected, and let's see how these 10 match up with the 10 that everybody else comes up with. So we got back the list of 10, and I think I had 8 out of 10, because I'm not always agreeable with everybody else.
Right.
And then all we do after that, there's really no discussion. There could be a little discussion, but there doesn't have to be, and we're running, you know, short on time, and we've discussed everybody. And then we make the checks, and we go to 5. What was interesting when we were at the 10 is that we had 4 offensive linemen in the 10. And I'm just flipping around in my office. I'm going to give you the names of the 4 that we had. So the 4 that survived from 15 to 10, Tony Boselli, Alan Faneca, Steve Hutchinson, and Kevin Mawai.
Hmm.
You know, Boselli had the short career, but Faneca, 6 All-Pros, 9 Pro Bowls. Hutchinson, 6 All-Pros, 7 Pro Bowls. Kevin Mawai, 6 All-Pros, 8 Pro Bowls.
Hmm.
A lot of good players. And the guy that we crossed off the list was Joe Jacoby, 13 years, 3 All-Pros, 4 Pro Bowls, won 3 Super Bowls, lost another one. So 4 Super Bowl appearances with those Washington Redskin Hogs. And like I said, it's so tough. It's kind of like, you know, you watch that triathlon that they have, and that person who limps across the finish line, they are so happy that they finished, but they are totally exhausted. So when I walk out of that room, I'm kind of like totally exhausted. Mm. You know, I'm happy for the guys that we put in, Terrell Owens and Randy Moss and Brian Urlacher, but I realize that to do that, you had to run past all these other guys.
Right.
And that's the part that just kind of, you know, hit you in the gut, because
that strikes me as the hard part.
They're former players, and some of them, I like to call them former teammates. I played with them in the Pro Bowls.
I agree. I mean, that's the hard part, right? It's not who you let in; it's who you can't get in because of the constraints of the Hall of Fame.
And you're kind of telling them not now,
right?
And sometimes, you know, that's the way the Hall of Fame likes to frame it. Well, you know, they look at the final 15, and they say that, you know, 97% of these guys end up in. Well, how about the 3% that don't,
yeah.
who are so close, so many times. Like Jerry Kramer, who went in the seniors committee, had been a finalist 10 previous times.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
And, you know, his candidacy had stretched over 40 years.
Yeah.
You know, James, I was talking to Steve, and I talked to actually John Murphy last week about this. And actually, we had the guy, his name skips me. He's the one who presented Terrell Owens' case to you guys. But
right.
I was having these conversations with all of them. And for me, it came down to you couldn't put T.O. over Randy Moss or vice versa. I mean, both of those guys were the best two receivers in the game in the period that they actually played. And they are statistically up there right behind Jerry Rice, so it's hard to put one in over the other.
And the guy who's in front of them is Isaac Bruce, who didn't get in.
Right.
So because there's so much focus on the wide receiver position now, when we look at these players who have, you know, set records that, you know, at one time people would have thought, you know, people would never approach, but you know, we're just doing it. You know, you look at the Super Bowl the other day. Tom Brady throws for 505, and they lose.
Right.
So those numbers are going to keep getting inflated. But what doesn't get inflated is kind of the eyeball test. When you watch these guys play, what did you think of them?
Tell me a little bit now. If move away from the Super Bowl. Did you stay in Minneapolis for the Super Bowl? What did you think?
I was going to give you guys a hard time because I actually was on the plane. So I saw the first quarter with my wife and with Charles Haley. And anybody who's ever been around Charles Haley, it's like sitting next to a comedian.
Yeah.
And so watching the game with him was kind of fun. And even listening to his perspective, because his perspective is a lot different. He, you know, he's talked about the fact that you can't hit the quarterback anymore and you can't be mean and you got to be nice. And so that was kind of fun. And then on the plane, you know, because you can have the internet, but I don't have one of those things where I can watch the game, you can kind of keep up with the score. And the pilot was giving us the score also. So there were a couple of groans when it was 29-19. And then, when there was a big cheer, which I found interesting going back to the West Coast when the Patriots went ahead. And, I did play 10 weeks with the Eagles. So I jump on that bandwagon any time I can.
Yeah, you're not going to get a ring, though, if they get a ring. You're not on that list.
I don't even think I'm getting a hat.
Yeah, you mentioned Charles Haley. He was on the broad. They mentioned him briefly on the broadcast as one of two people who have won 5 Super Bowls,
with
the 49ers and the Cowboys. And he and Tom Brady hold the record for players with the most Super Bowl rings. So Charles Haley, also in the Pro Football Hall of Fame, is no shrinking violet when it comes to credentials.
No, not even close.
But he is a guy you got to appreciate. You got to sit next to him during a game. I'm sure that guy's.
Yep.
He's never at a loss for words.
He knows he's wired a little differently, and he loves it.
Yeah. He's one of them.
That's
guys,
being nice.
One of those guys that you're like, all right, I got to prepare myself.
Steve Tasker, along with Donald Jones, we're talking with James Lofton on the Subway Fresh Take Hotline on the John Murphy Show. And James, one thing I got to tell you, you know, you played in the Super Bowls with me and all the way back in the day, and you go down, you were Radio Row all week this week. And what's the thing that grabs you about having a Super Bowl in a city like Minneapolis, or what struck you about this Super Bowl in regards to others? I mean, what are your thoughts about where the Super Bowl is and the city it's in or whatever else? I mean, what do you find interesting these days about it?
I came up with a crazy idea as I was doing my show a couple of weeks ago, radio show, that after Super Bowl 50, we should have gone to an alternating format, have it in the AFC city, have it in the NFC city. Whatever team wins coming out of that conference, that's where you play the game.
Hmm.
You know, we do it for the AFC and NFC championship games, and nobody, you know, gets all upset about it. And I know people want to come in, you want to make the Super Bowl a special thing, which it could still be special. You could still have a 30-minute halftime show. You could still have performers and all of that. But you know, because we were on this thing with the Vikings. Oh, finally, maybe somebody's going to be able to play in it and host it at the same time. It'll be in their city. If you had gone to AFC, NFC, AFC, NFC, and the first year you went AFC, it would have been in New England last year. If you'd gone to NFC for the alternate year, it would have been in Philadelphia this year. And can you imagine the people in Philadelphia and have the Super Bowl in their city.
Well, I keep thinking, listen, my big idea is to have an NFL city somewhere off the, you know, go down to put a stadium in Puerto Rico and build your own city down there and have the Super Bowl there every year. Make that a destination.
You know, James,
well, the people in San Diego would love that now. Yeah, they lost their team.
They definitely would. They definitely would. You know,
but
James,
they do it in college football because they alternate it between those four cities.
Right.
So if I were going to do four, and I know it may not be everybody's favorite, I'd do Miami, I'd do New Orleans, I'd do Phoenix, and I'd do the new stadium that they're going to build
in L.A.
In Los Angeles. Yeah, right. I'd do those four.
You take Dallas out of it?
I was just about to say that.
And the reason I'm doing it, Steve, is I want guaranteed golf tournaments.
That's right.
All those cities. You know, New Orleans could be a little sneaky cold, but I'm pretty sure you could still sneak in rounds of golf down in New Orleans because I did it last time I played there.
You can't take that stadium in Atlanta out. Or Vegas.
I just did.
I'm
giving you four.
What about Vegas?
I'm sorry that the municipalities were arm wrestled into building new stadiums, but I'm just going to go with four, just like college football does.
We're talking with the commissioner of the NFL, James Lofton, on the Subway Fresh Take Hotline. You're with Steve Tasker and Donald Jones. I'm just teasing. But everybody's got an idea of how to improve the game, James, whether it be where the Super Bowl venue or wherever. I want to ask you this. How can the game be made better with the catch rule?
Well, I think that if you get 2 feet in bounds, and even if you're falling out of bounds, if you have possession of the ball and then you hit the ground, you've caught the ball. So that's number one. And that's the same way with breaking the plane of the end zone. If you have possession, you know, 2 feet, one knee, whatever, and then if you hit the ground and it comes loose, you've broken the plane. Because if you're a runner and you stick that ball out, and you break the plane, the play's over.
That's right.
The same way for receivers. In bounds, I still think that we need to be able to get it all the way to the ground and survive the ground if you're going to the ground.
All right,
so
I got a question for you.
I don't mind that part, but on the sidelines and the end zone, I change it a little bit.
Did you see the Zach Ertz touchdown?
I did.
Immediately,
I thought it was a touchdown.
Right, me too. Right. But what about that and the Jesse James touchdown in the Pittsburgh-New England game earlier in this season?
Jesse James, because he's going to the ground as he's catching the ball, even though he's trying to turn as he's going to the ground, and it's the same way with the Dez Bryant one. And Dez Bryant, you know, bless his heart, he still thinks he caught the ball. He doesn't care about the rule. He's just telling him, I caught that one. So that one's different than all the other ones.
See, that's my thing. I mean, all of us have played receiver, and you know when you caught a ball. You know, but then they go to 30 different TV angles.
Well, that's the other thing, because television is such a factor in all this. And the high-definition, slow-motion replay, I've had a lot of fun with it because now, Steve, what I've done, I've told people – I never dropped the pass. I just didn't complete the process.
That's right. That is exactly right. We're with James Lofton. James, thanks so much for being on. Really appreciate it. James on the Fresh Take Subway Fresh Take Hotline. Enjoy this off season. It's been great. I'm glad. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks, guys.
All right, man. James Lofton, former Buffalo Bill Hall of Fame, Pro Football Hall of Fame member, Hall of Fame selector. He's got quite the resume now, doesn't he?
He does.
He's pretty impressive.
He's impressive.
He's a coach in the NFL.
Busy. Yeah, he was a coach in the league. Yeah. It's hard, though. I've heard he talked about being a coach and being in that room, the Hall of Fame room, but being a coach and sitting in personnel meetings.
Yeah.
And listening to how they actually talk about players.
You gotta strip away all the niceties, Ooh. I guess. Huh?
I mean, I've talked to personnel guys. I remember when I was actually playing, I was talking to this guy. I was at the Super Bowl in Dallas when Pittsburgh lost to the Packers. I was at that game, and I went to this event, and there was a personnel guy from the Falcons who was a former player. I forget his name. But we were talking, and he was like, man, you can't believe how they talk about players in these meetings.
Yeah.
And that always stuck with me.
I know.
And then I had a chance to sit in meetings at different schools, different colleges, and hearing about them talk about the players. And I'm like, man, I understand this is big money, but these are still kids at the end of the day. You know? And I'm like, how are you just dogging these kids like that?
You know what I think about? I know what they were saying about me, man. That guy, wow, I can't believe that guy's on our team.
Yeah.
All right. On that, we got to take a break.
Get rid of this guy.
That guy, he's stained. Football's not important to him. All right. We're on the John Murphy Show, presented by Napa Auto Parts from One Bills Drive. I'm Steve Tasker, along with Donald Jones. We'll be right back.
back with more of the John Murphy Show.
Steve Tasker and Donald Jones in for John Murphy, who's on vacation. This is presented by Napa Auto Parts from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio. We're going to start talking in this segment about the draft. And, you know, we've spoken, you know, a couple of things about people talking about Baker Mayfield. Everybody here in Buffalo, you included, I guess, talk about Baker Mayfield having that it factor and being the guy. Now, he's a Heisman Trophy winner, and he's got personality. And I'll agree with you. It's hard to see that guy shrinking away from the spotlight because he is such a big personality. But also, you know, this is at a time where, you know, the draft starts to come up, and, you know, everybody has a mock draft. And I'm going to start the conversation by saying you can forget all of them this year because there's going to be some movement at the top, and there's no way to predict what's going to happen. No way.
There's no way that you can ever predict what's going to happen in a draft. I mean, nobody would have thought the Bills would trade back 17 spots last year. There was not a mock draft out there that would believe. I didn't believe. I kept on – during the draft, we're sitting there, and I'm like, all right, the Bills can – and everybody was saying, man, they need to trade up or they need to trade back. And I'm like, yeah, you can move, but it's not that easy to move. And then all of a sudden, and then you had Reuben Foster still sitting there. You had the tight end from who's now at Tampa from Alabama. I forget his name now. Who was still sitting there. You had somebody else who was still sitting there. Pat Mahomes was there on the board. All of these guys still sitting there. And I'm like, you got to take one of these guys. And then all of a sudden, the news comes out, and it's like breaking news here. Our producer, Jay Harris, is like losing his mind. We hear the guys in the other room screaming, oh, because they knew what was going to happen. And John and I are actually out here on set, and we're like, what's going on? Because we have no clue what's happening, right? We're like, what's going on? And then we get the news, they just traded back 17 spots.
Right.
And first of all, we were upset because it was a long day for us.
Oh, listen. Because
we had to do the show from 12 to 3, then we had to come back and do the show. Once again, our producer, Jay Harris, is like, yeah, what's the worst going to happen? It's not going to be that long. I mean, you're sitting at number 10. I think they were sitting at number 10. You're sitting at number 10, so once they draft that person right there, then you'll talk about it, get the reaction, and then, you were sitting at 10. You talk about it, we'll be out of here.
Right.
They trade back 17 spots, and we're like, oh, so we're going to be here all night.
And then they traded back 17 spots, and then later on they traded again and then traded back up. And
it was crazy.
It was fun.
It was fun.
Because it was like, wow. You could talk about that stuff for a month.
Right,
on the show,
exactly.
Right?
I mean, so it's like all of these mock drafts, you have no clue who's going to make trades. And there are teams that really need or love players. There are teams that, especially at the quarterback position, so there are going to be a bunch of teams trying to jump up to get a Baker Mayfield.
Yeah.
A Sam Darnold, Rosen, Allen. I think all of those guys are going to go in the top 10. The wild card is the Lamar Jackson kid from Louisville. We'll see where he ends up.
Yeah, because he does some good stuff as a quarterback. They say he may be receiver stuff.
Yeah,
I just saw a thing today where a guy was breaking down some of the stuff he did, and he looks pretty good in the pocket sometimes.
Right.
I mean, he's got that kind of that Deshaun Watson kind of thing going,
right,
where he's as an athlete, he's got a big arm, and he's a big, strong athlete. I mean, you look at him, he's like, man, I kind of like to have him on my team. You know,
he's the wild
doing
card.
Doing something. Even he's covering kicks. The guy's an athlete, you know.
Right,
I mean, right,
exactly. He's the wild card, and then you have the kid Mason Rudolph from Oklahoma State. So you got all of these guys, and I know people here want the Bills to take a quarterback. I don't know what
They're going to take one.
It depends on who's still sitting there.
They throw a curve out if they pick up one of the free agents, you know, those guys coming out of Minnesota or whatever, but yeah, whatever. Hey, listen, you guys can call in 803-0550 if you want to talk to Donald and I about this draft thing and all the quarterbacks and what you think the Buffalo Bills should do. Also, outside the Buffalo area, it's toll-free 1-888-550-2550, and also you can add us at John Murphy Show. And I'm with you. I think – there's so many unpredictables, but I think there's no question that if you're a team like Buffalo, if you're a team like Cleveland, if you're a team like who else did I write down here? Minnesota,
yeah,
Denver, the Jets, even Jacksonville with Blake Bortles. You got all these teams that if you're going to get a quarterback for my money, you got to get one, and I don't care what it takes. And if you got to get one, get two, get three.
Yeah.
You know, sign a free agent and draft a guy. Sign somebody and then draft another guy. Just get guys in the door so you can look at it. And I'm telling you what, we talked about this with a caller earlier in the show, I'm not done with Nate Peterman either. I like what I see in him. People are going crazy over the 5 interception game. Throw that out. You can use it against him. I get it. But let me tell you something. If you go back there and look at it, it's not all his fault. And there's a lot of great things about Nate Peterman that you got to find out about. You got to give him more time. You got to give him more opportunities. He got the shot in L.A. where the roof caved in after the fullback doinked one off his forehead and started things on a down roll. Then he gets in a blizzard game against the Indianapolis Colts and gets a concussion. So, you know, the guy's had three bad breaks. One, that first interception in L.A. Secondly, he gets into a game that's like snowing.
Yeah. And then snowing.
Yeah, and then third, he gets a concussion. So he can't even really play or come back. And then he gets thrown in late in the Jacksonville game, which was desperation.
And that's the last memory you have of him. You have the five interceptions, and then you have him in the playoff game throwing that out
tipped
route from
interception.
Was it a tipped interception?
Yeah, the guy tipped it to himself, Jalen Ramsey.
Well, right, but he threw it from the far hash, an out route, Jalen Ramsey breaks on it. And people are like, man, this guy has nothing that he can help us with.
He's a good player. I like him, and I'm not done with him. I'm not saying he's going to be our franchise quarterback, but I'm saying you got to find out more about him, because that'll tell you what. You go out and watch the guy practice every day, and it's like, man, we got – you know, I see it.
Yeah.
I see why he's on the team. I see why he's on the field. No question he's got a lot of things to learn, but he's just part of the puzzle. You got two draft picks in the first round. You got all this capital in the first three rounds used as collateral to buy up, trade up, whatever. You can sign free agents. There's some pretty good guys out there. I mean, Drew Brees is not going to hit the market, even though his contract is up.
Jimmy Garoppolo's not
hitting the market, but he also takes San Francisco off the board for drafting a guy.
Right.
They're not in the market. Mm-hmm. So there's a ton of stuff going on. Let's take a call.
Okay.
All right, let's go to we're going to take a call from Brad in Rochester. Brad, you're on the John Murphy Show. Go ahead.
Hey, Stephen Donald. A couple things. First, I'll talk about the draft in a second, but the touchdown in the Super Bowl where Clements, the running back for Philly, catches that ball, and then he kind of shifts it over a little, and at that point he's out of bounds, and they called it a touchdown. I mean, you can't watch that play and not think the Kelvin Benjamin play against New England. I'm like, wait a minute. That ball's moving more than the Benjamin one was. And they called it a touchdown because it's the Super Bowl, and they can't overturn that call in the Super Bowl because you'll never hear the end of it. And it's almost like the commissioner – talk to that guy that's in charge of reversing the calls that they got to talk to before they make the call on the field, and told them you can never do that again, which you did in the New England Buffalo game, because it was a horrible call. You can't overturn what the ref saw, and he did.
Yeah.
And
I'll tell you this, Brad, though, and I got to get it. I'll let you go on in just a second. Don't think that the commissioner stepped into that room and said, "Hey, don't do that." Believe me, there may have been a meeting after the fact, or they might have discussed it, but believe me, the commissioner does not get involved in that stuff. So don't blame the commissioner on that. Or they might have revamped what they said, or they might have decided that shouldn't have been a catch. But don't blame Roger Goodell for the thing in the Super Bowl and after. But you're right. The Kelvin Benjamin catch, come on, bro. I'm with you 100%.
Come on, bro.
Go ahead, Brad. Now, what's your next point?
Barely moving. As far as the draft goes, last year when they were there at number 10, most of us wanted them to grab maybe Watson or Mahomes, maybe even Kaiser at that point. Mm-hmm. And when they traded down, I was one of the fans. I actually called John and Donald after they did it. I was furious because there were so many players who were top talent up there that we didn't grab at the time. And we moved down, and I'm immediately thinking, Kansas City's a playoff team. They make the playoffs almost every year. So the draft pick's going to be down in the 20s. Sure enough, it's down in the 20s.
Mm-hmm.
The plan was to wait till 2018, which I didn't agree with, because I'm like, well, how do you know you're going to be able to go up there and get one? We could have Mahomes or Watson fall into our lap at 10, and it wasn't Bean at the time because he wasn't here. But McDermott decided to go forward with Tyrod, and now, lo and behold, 2018's here, and we might not have the collateral to go up and get one of these quarterbacks.
Now, I think we've got the collateral. The question is, are you willing to give it up, and who's going to be there for you? There's no question we've got the collateral, Brad. We can do it. But go ahead. What else?
Or whatever.
Go ahead.
I mean, would they do that, though? I don't think Bean and McDermott are going to be willing to get rid of all the picks they built to go up and get one. And not to mention, like, all the teams up at the top seem like they need quarterbacks this year.
Well, don't kid yourself. I mean, the deal hasn't been done, and we can't say. But don't think you're not going to do it. And plus, don't think they're going to give up draft capital in order to make that deal. They may give up players. They've got Chantrell Henderson. They've got Cordy Glenn. Both guys can play. They've got Deion Dawkins. They've got three pretty good tackles that can go. And so there's those guys. They've got other capital as well. So don't think that it's just going to be draft picks and cash for these guys. You know, yeah. They've got some players that they can throw at it too.
That's what I've been saying. I think you should, instead of trading your entire draft, you can trade away one of your first round picks to try to get up, but then trade players.
Yeah.
You know, or maybe next year's
pick or
something like that.
Or a third rounder, yeah, or a second rounder. You know, you can still keep one of those first rounders, get another first rounder, so you still have two first rounders, trade away one of your left guys at left tackle that can really play, and a third rounder.
They're going to move.
I'd make that deal if you can jump into the top five and get a Darnold,
yeah,
or a Rosen, or a guy like Mahomes or Watson, you know, one of those guys, Baker Mayfield.
I mean, they're going to move. I don't know if they're going to move that far up, but they're going to move back up. And I'm talking about throughout the entire course of the draft, they will move. Think about last year. They traded back 17 spots. Nobody thought they'd do that. Then you come back in the second round. They trade up to get Deion Dawkins. They trade up to get Zay Jones. I mean, they're going to move and try to play this thing the right way.
In fact, I think also that one of the things that's going to happen with these draft analysts, I don't think it's not really – conducive. It's not really smart to go out and make a mock draft. The only thing you should do is this. You should go to the college ranks and rank the players 1 through 100 or 1 through 50, mm-hmm, 1 through 55.
Right.
Those are the top 55 players at whatever position they are at. And that's how you make your draft. And that's where you go. Because the order of which the teams are picking is not going to be the way they pick.
Right.
So I want to know, tell me who the top 55 guys are in the draft, or top 64. Let's go top two rounds.
Top two rounds.
Top 64 guys, I want to know who those guys are. Other than that, I don't care who's picking. I just want to know who those guys are.
Yeah, I mean, the trades come down the last minute. It's you just never know what's going to happen in the draft. And so, the mock drafts are just like, they really do it for social media and for clicks. You know,
well, yeah.
So that Mel Kiper gets more and more people going to his mock draft. So he'll put out 15 mock drafts before the draft, just so that everybody. Did you see what Mel Kiper said? Then everybody's going to his Twitter to see what his mock draft was. I mean, we live in a world, social media world, where everybody wants likes and clicks.
I don't. I could not. I don't get any likes and I don't get any clicks either. All right, let's take another call. Trent,
your likes are from
your kids. That's right. My kids don't even like me. Trent from Rochester, you want to talk about Nick Foles all the way. Trent, what do you got?
Well, I got a couple points too, Steve. Number one, going into the draft, I would like to see the Bills give up a second rounder if possible for Nick Foles. He's only making a little over $7 million a year on his current contract, but also it goes in the draft. They go into the draft with a lot of more flexibility, and they don't have to be so desperate. But also, when you look at the draft, like you said about the mock, if I had to pay these analysts for being right about these mocks, they'd be starving right now. So the Giants, I just can't see them drafting a quarterback. You know, Eli Manning, to me, the quickest way to the Super Bowl is to get a big play wide receiver or something. So I do believe the guys are going to fall that we didn't think we're going to. As far as, like you guys said, it doesn't have to be draft picks. To me, Cordy Glenn and Tyrod Taylor, man, I don't know which team I would send them to, but I think those two together are very, very attractive to a team that needs a quarterback and needs somebody solid on the line. I would actually part with both of them for the right to move up, but I wouldn't give up the draft currency. So those are the two points I want to make. But Steve, my question to you and Donald before I hang up is, for Nick Foles, what would you give up? And I'm going to hang up and let you.
That's exactly what I was going to ask you, Trent. You said you'd give up a number two for Nick Foles. Yeah, so would I. What if you have to give up a two and a one, or a two number ones? What if you have to give up two ones, or a one and a two and a left tackle? I mean, the question is, how high do you have to jump to get
right.
it? I mean, I'd love Nick Foles as well. He's a great player. He's a great human being. We've all seen that in the run-up to the Super Bowl, what kind of guy he is, what kind of leader he was, how much faith the Eagles had in him, how much they liked him, how right. the great relationship between Nick Foles and Carson Wentz. Exactly the kind of guy that would fit into Sean McDermott's culture. Am I right?
You're right.
Right. So how high do you go for him?
I mean, we keep saying – you're going to get into a rabbit hole here. And teams are going to get into a rabbit hole trying to chase Nick Foles. It's going to happen because this guy and people – I've had people tweet me like, you're crazy if you want to go for Nick Foles. He just had a good playoff run. Well, yeah, he did. He had a great playoff run, number one. He was a Super Bowl MVP. And it wasn't by default. Like, this dude played well, dropping dimes in the Super Bowl. All
he
playoffs.
Made some great throws all the way through the playoffs.
But this wasn't his first rodeo in having a good run or season or any of that. Back in, what, 2013?
2013, he put up a season like nobody's seen. He had like 27 touchdowns, 2 interceptions.
Right. So you're talking about a guy with 1 year left on his contract. You can trade for him. You can. He's only going to be making $7 million for this year. And then you can pay him after that if you want to keep him and pay him instead of just going to pay Kirk Cousins $26 million a year or something like that, which is what he wants, $27 million a year. It's like, why?
I'm with you 100%.
Why do that? But we know teams are so hungry for a quarterback that teams are going to be calling like, hey, man, I'll give you this and this. And this, if you give me Nick Foles.
And what are you going to do, too, with – it's not just Nick Foles. There's guys on that list. Case Keenum went 14-2 with the Minnesota Vikings. And he was their guy, too. He was their – and he wasn't their number one guy because Bradford got hurt.
Mm-hmm.
Sam Bradford comes out, lights it up in week one. Week two, he goes down. So then in week two, not week 14, week two, Case Keenum comes in, and they go 14-2 on the season.
Mm-hmm.
Who are they going to keep?
Probably, I would think, because it's hard, right?
You got to take a breath. He's like, oh, gosh.
You want to say, man, you got to keep
Case Keenum.
They
got Teddy Bridgewater, and they got Sam Bradford, and they got Case Keenum.
You'd have to say, man, you got to keep Case Keenum. But then you're going to think to yourself, well, this dude has been a journeyman quarterback his entire career. Did he just have a good year this year?
Well, he had a number one defense.
Right. So you got to think about it. And then you look at Sam Bradford. This guy is like a piece of glass.
Yeah, he's a China doll.
He really is, you know. So you don't know. And then you have Teddy Bridgewater, who was proving to be their franchise guy, and then he went down with a gruesome knee injury. Yeah. You don't – I mean, obviously, their medical staff will know where his knee is, but you don't know if he takes another hit on that thing again, what's going to happen, all of that stuff. So that – I'm glad I'm not that coach and GM and have to be in that room and make that decision.
All right, we're going to take another call. Nick in Rochester. Nick's got an idea about what they should do in this draft. Nick, go ahead.
Hey, thanks for taking the call, Steve and Don. It's a pleasure talking to you guys.
Mm-hmm.
By the way, Steve, I was a high school athlete with Shane Conlon, one of your old teammates, so I love watching you guys play. It was awesome.
Appreciate it.
My book, you guys, you're a Hall of Famer, buddy. But on to the subject. I've been calling in talking about this for months now. I say stick with Peterman and give the guy a chance. Use all your draft capital to build that team, the interior line, the defensive line. Get some good talent around that guy. Give him a chance and maybe bring in a vet to back him up. But the crapshoot on the once-a-decade all-star anomaly quarterback I think is a losing battle. I agree 100% with you. Peterman's got the talent, and we got to give him a chance and start building that team. Other thing, and coming into the playoffs, all you hear the commentators talk about are how all these teams got to the big game, and it's the whole team. It's the defense. It's the offensive line. You know, just seems like we're jumping to this quarterback frenzy again, and we're neglecting the rest of the holes on our team.
Exactly.
That's, yeah, it's a good point by Nick, and thanks for the call, Nick. You see these teams making it, but let's face it, here's my take a little bit on that, how teams get to the Super Bowl. Yeah, listen, you get to the Super Bowl because you've got a great team. You got a bunch of guys. You got a good defense, a solid defense. You're well coached, and you don't make many mistakes, and you got guys that can make plays.
Mm-hmm.
But let's face it, you can get to the playoffs and be flawed. We've seen that as well. Jacksonville got to the championship game, and they were flawed. Mm-hmm. Buffalo is a flawed team. We've all said it. You look over in the NFC side, and those teams that, you know, kind of get into the playoffs like Buffalo did, they're flawed. But let me tell you something. You can go deep with a flawed roster. But the teams that are really good, and ultimately it happens once in a while, but like it happened with the Giants with Eli Manning, they kind of sneak into the playoffs, and they get hot, and then they go on a run.
A couple of big plays.
They get a couple of matchups during the playoffs that, you know, you can't anticipate, but mm-hmm. work for them. I think one of the things about it is, no question, but when you get to the level of the Super Bowl, your whole team is playing very well.
Right.
Whether they deserve to or not, whether they are good or not, whether they were a strength in the regular season or not, all of a sudden they're playing, like, better. So he's right. You got to build a team. That's what Sean McDermott has said. That's why all of those multitude of players and moves they made on draft day, they made in training camp, they made early in the season, right after training camp, and then during the season, all of those moves were to build a team. And what Nick said about Nate Peterman, you should be able, with the play that we got, the numbers they got from Tyrod, the only number that jumps out about Tyrod that is better than almost every other quarterback in the league, I can't think of any, is he, like Alex Smith, he doesn't turn it over. Other than that, ton of guys have much better numbers than him.
Right.
A ton of guys. Everybody. They're the worst team passing in the league by yards, but he never turned it over.
Right. And that's huge. People would make the argument, well, he doesn't throw it into certain windows. And I get that argument. I get both sides of the argument. I just think ultimately you got to be better than 31st in the league in passing. Yeah. That's just not going to cut it year after year.
Do you think
Nate
Peterman would be 31st in passing? That's a good question. I don't know. We don't know.
That's a great question.
He threw five interceptions in the first play. He probably would think he'd get better.
You'd think so.
All right. We're going to take a break. We're way overdue. I'm new at this, I think. This is the John Murphy Show. This is the John Murphy Show presented by Napa Auto Parts. I'm Steve Tasker and Donald Jones filling in for Murphy's on vacation. This is it from One Bills Drive, and this is the Buffalo Bills Radio Network.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show.
Steve Tasker and Donald Jones in for Murphy's on vacation, presented by Napa Auto Parts from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio. We're taking calls. You're taking your calls, although we got a bunch of calls backed up because I'm new at this and I'm having trouble with the buttons. But 803-0550 and outside Buffalo, toll-free 1-888-550-2550 or at John Murphy Show on
Twitter.
Some
people out in Hawaii were saying, like, who's having problems with the buttons? As they kept hitting the button and everybody was alerted that it was some nuclear stuff.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, that's the wrong
twice.
Button. We ain't got no buttons like that. We've been talking about the draft. We've been talking about the quarterback situation. We talked about the catch rule. We've got Trey Wingo coming up at the top of the hour. He's the co-host of Wingo and Golic. Or is it Golic and Wingo?
Golic and Wingo.
Golic and Wingo. See, I saw Mike Golic in at the Super Bowl, one of the other guys that was right there. You may not know this. You know Mike Golic, who was on for, you know, Golic and Mike and Mike for so many years. Golic and I were drafted together by the Houston Oilers back in 1985.
Really?
I was the 9th-round pick. He was the 10th-round. And we both had double-digit careers. I mean, I was 13, so he was 10, and he, you know.
Both of you guys are just bodies on the team until became.
We were mannequins, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And, you know, he's been on that show for a while. Now, obviously, it switched over, but he's been doing that for a while.
A decade and a half, at least 15 years, maybe, something like that.
Yeah.
He was great. He's a great storyteller, and he's a good dude,
too. Now his son is on the show.
Yeah, his son is Mike, too, isn't
Mike Golic Jr.
Yeah, Mike Golic Jr., yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that must be cool to be able to work with your son every day. You think that's cool?
He comes on. I don't think he's, you know, it's Golic and Wingo, but yeah, I mean.
He comes on quite often.
Does he?
Yeah, he comes on quite often.
I ain't got time to listen to radio.
I mean, everybody in the other room knows I don't sleep. So I turn on the TV and, you know, they're on, you know, simulcast. So they're on ESPN in the mornings. And I'm like, wow, all right, cool. That's what's up.
Well, we're going to have Wingo on. He's going to talk to us about the draft and some of the other stuff. We'll talk to him about a little bit about the Super Bowl and his experience. And those guys, let me tell you, the players for the Super Bowl are less busy than the guys in the media are in the Super Bowl. I mean, it's a madhouse.
Yeah.
And Wingo and those guys, they've got those. It's a beehive. I mean, everybody's grinding around.
Because you walk through, and you probably had this. I mean, you were doing the show for us, but you probably had people like, can you do our show?
Not so much, because it was Buffalo. I mean, we're from, you know, nobody cared this year. Now, when I told you guys, I called you, I was talking to Murph on the phone, and I was like, dude, I can't wait till the Bills are in the Super Bowl, because then it's going to be, the red carpet.
And
it's going to be fun.
Guys like Trey Wingo and those guys who are national guys, everybody watches them on TV.
Yeah.
Everybody wants to talk to them. So if they walk through Radio Row, it's like, You can't even turn one way without somebody asking you to.
Yeah. It may be different this year for me a little bit because CBS has the Super Bowl this year in Atlanta.
Ooh,
so we'll have it. So I'll be one of their guys, and I'm going to sideline and booth guy. So we're going to take
a
break.
Don't sound so down about it.
All right, you're at the John Murphy Show. Steve Tasker along with Donald Jones presented by Napa Auto Parts. We're going to come back after the break and talk to Trey Wingo. You're listening to us from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.
This is the John Murphy Show on Buffalo Bills Radio.
McCoy at the 10, at the 5, into the end zone. Touchdown! And a great run. Fires down the middle. It is intercepted by Micah Hyde. Intercepted. Tre Day. Tre'Davious White. He's in trouble. He is sacked. Jordan Poyer came unblocked. It is Jerry Hughes who brings him down. What a big play there. Poy cuts to the right. Outrunning everybody. 10, 5. Touchdown! Touchdown! Touchdown, Buffalo!
Live from One Bills Drive, this is the John Murphy Show, presented by Napa Auto Parts.
Back with Donald Jones and Steve Tasker. Murph's on vacation, kind of holding down the fort. We're going to talk to Trey Wingo in just a minute or so.
Do you hear something beeping, or is it just me? I mean, you're a little older. You might not be able to hear it.
I hear beeping all the time, man. Really? Even when I'm laying in bed at night and it's a quiet room.
I hear something. I just don't know what it is.
No,
I don't know if it's
not me.
Here or if it's
I have
there.
A constant whine. It's true. From wearing the headphones all the time in the booth and stuff. And it used to be when I first started, I had levels way up. It would take a couple of days for it to quiet down. And I remember a championship game in Indianapolis between Patriots and Peyton Manning. I think I still have scar tissue from that.
From how loud it was?
It was so loud in that dome, in the old RCA dome.
Yeah.
It was horrific.
There are some stadiums, man. Seattle's
bad.
They get loud. You're like.
They built that thing to be a. They built that to be loud. That half roof.
Even as a player, I think people underestimate how loud it gets on the field. You're on the field. Especially if you're the away team in certain stadiums, you're like, whoa, I can't even hear myself talk right now.
We could be sitting as close as you are, and you really have to yell and read the lips before you can.
I went through it with Roscoe once, Roscoe Parrish. Roscoe, different guy. But we're out there in a game. The crowd is crazy. I'm a rookie. I'm lined up. He's in the slot. I'm outside. He looks at me. He's like, what's the play? And I'm like, what's the play? Yeah.
You're with Steve Tasker and Donald Jones on the John Murphy Show. John's on vacation. This is John Murphy Show presented by Napa Auto Parts for One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio. We're going to talk to Trey Wingo and of Golic and Wingo.
Yeah.
Trey, thanks for coming on. Steve Tasker and Donald Jones, appreciate you coming on. How are you doing after your Super Bowl? You got a hangover or did you catch up on your sleep? What was it like for you?
Brother, it's all good because in about 4 hours, I'm about to jump on a plane to Hawaii. So I'm doing just fine. Thank you very much.
Oh, very nice. I'm so happy for you.
How long are you in Hawaii?
We'll be out there for a couple of weeks. So year after the end of the season, I get away for a little bit and then come right back.
I'll tell you, the best part about Hawaii is that it is out there, man. You can't just stop by. You don't get any.
You're out there.
You don't get drop-ins.
You don't get the drop-by. Yeah.
Will you see Boomer while you're out there as he lives out there?
Yes, of course. What? Donald, why wouldn't I see him? I mean, come on.
That's great. Well, thanks for Trey Wingo. Thanks for coming on the John Murphy Show. Donald Jones, Steve Tasker. Hey, I just want to ask you all the current questions before you turn it off for this season and start turning it off for next season. What do you think about Matt Patricia, Josh McDaniels? What kind of dent is that going to put in the aura and the mystique of the Patriots, if any?
Well, I think there's no doubt there'll be an adjustment. Look, the last time that Belichick lost both coordinators off his staff at the same time was 2005, and that was after they had beaten, of all teams, the Eagles in the Super Bowl, in Super Bowl 39, and they didn't win another Super Bowl for 10 years. Now, they made it to a couple. You know, they lost to the Giants in Super Bowls 42 and 46, but, you know, it's going to take an adjustment, and there may be coaches from that coaching staff that either go with Josh to Indy or go with Matt to Detroit. So there's going to be a significant amount of turnover on the coaching staff for the Patriots. That being said, the one thing we've known for sure is the best and most important coach on the Patriots coaching staff is the one that's not going anywhere, we don't think.
Right. That would be Bill Belichick. Now, Bill Belichick seems to be a guy who has a bit of an ego. I don't know. Maybe you know, Trey. Who knows? But
we all do.
Right, exactly. So the question becomes is we saw something come out last week with Aaron Rodgers, and he talked about how he was upset that they let go of Alex Van Pelt without really consulting him. Does Bill Belichick consult Tom Brady when bringing in another offensive coordinator? Because we know Tom Brady's really the offensive coordinator at this point.
Well, I don't think so. I mean, I think Bill believes firmly in the dynamic that we're going to do what I think we should do. I think that's one of the reasons that led to that tension this season when, you know, the article came out on ESPN.com and some of the people had poo-pooed it, but some of the things that were in that article, well, that's sort of been justified. I mean, the Crafts admitted there was tension on the coaching staff this year, tension in the locker room, tension in the organization. And at one point, Robert Kraft said, hey, we all have egos. Some of them, they need to be checked. I don't know if he was talking about Bill. I don't know if he was talking about Tom. But there were some things that were going on that were made it a little less smooth, I think, than a lot of people thought. So I would not imagine that Bill would run things by Tom, because I just don't see him as a guy that operates that way, especially if he's the CEO of the football side of things. He may talk to him, but I don't think he'd go, hey, what do you think about this?
There's been some talk about Greg Schiano being the guy that comes in to run the defense. Do you give any credence to that? I know they have a relationship.
Well, they do have a decent relationship, and you know they used to work together, have a lot of practices and joint practices together too. So that wouldn't surprise me in the least if that turned out to be the case.
I got another question for you, and it's kind of along this topic. For me, we probably have never heard of the next offensive coordinator for the Patriots, mainly because he's probably going to come from the staff that's already there. Bill Belichick is big on promoting guys from within, and I think if you're going to please Tom Brady, give him somebody he knows and is familiar with and give the guy more experience. I mean, we've heard the articles, and I've read a lot about the way it has worked in the past there. I mean, Josh McDaniels is a guy who started breaking down film, was one of those 20 for 20 guys. He's working 20 hours a day, making $20,000 a year, doing nothing but watching film. And now he was the offensive coordinator, so it could be that the name is already there.
That very well could be, and that makes all the sense in the world, because that's how Belichick got his start.
Right.
You know, making next to nothing for the Baltimore Colts and their organization. So, you want to try and make those things as seamless as possible, obviously, but you also want to make sure you get the right guy. Because the thing with Brady now, let's be honest, he's not going to get better, okay? The question is, how long can he maintain? How long can he be at the level that he's currently at or maybe slightly below? Because it's going to happen eventually. I mean, I know, it doesn't look like it now. He's just coming off an MVP season where he threw 500 yards in the freaking Super Bowl. But at some point, Father Time is going to win. And you want to make sure that you just find someone that can help him maintain what he's doing right now.
You know, when we talk about this, and I'm going to actually flip over to another topic, but just to finish this one out, when we talk about this offensive coordinator and we talk about, you know, Tom Brady's still going to be Tom Brady, we'll see if he's still Tom Brady next year, I think people underestimate how important the offensive coordinator is even to a Tom Brady. When you look at the Atlanta Falcons and they switch over as Kyle Shanahan leaves, now you bring in a new offensive coordinator. And that offense was a totally different offense this year, and it suffered, especially in the beginning of the year.
No, you're right. I mean, I remember, you mentioned Kyle, I remember when Mike Shanahan left the 49ers after they won a Super Bowl, and Steve Young was talking about, hey, you know, we'll be fine, we can run this offense. I'm like, yeah, no, you can't. You know, that doesn't work. Never does.
Right.
So there will be an adjustment period. Absolutely there will be an adjustment period. I think it'll be pretty clear, though, from Bill's perspective, that he'll have a clear indication of what he wants that offensive coordinator to do and how he wants to run things. And I'm sure Tom will have input on that as well.
One question I got for you about the Patriots, and we'll move on to other teams now that we're sitting here in Buffalo Bills radio talking about nothing but the Patriots for a minute. But what do you think do you think Malcolm Butler's benching was the difference or a difference, or what do you think that meant? Is there going to be any ripple effects of the Malcolm Butler benching on the night before the Super Bowl?
Well, I think that for sure Malcolm Butler's time in New England is done. He's an unrestricted free agent. I don't think he wants to stay, and I don't think they really want him to be there after what happened Super Bowl Sunday. And I think he was actually found out the day of the game, right before kickoff. Now, there's two ways to look at this. Do I think it had an effect? Well, I think so. Nick Foles tore him up. You know, I mean, he had, 372 yards, 3 touchdowns, and looked really, really good. Now, that being said, he looked really, really good the week before against the newborn defensive football of Minnesota in the NFC Championship game. But, you know, I sort of go back and forth on this because there's a report out there that, you know, he had missed some curfew and violations of team rules and all this kind of stuff.
And if that's why they did it, now Bill said it wasn't. Bill said, and a couple of people said it was based on matchups and all this kind of stuff. Well, I find that hard to believe because the guy played 98% of the snaps. 98%,
right.
Okay?
Right.
So you're telling me there's not a matchup that at those 98% that you couldn't make work with him? So I find that a little hard to believe.
Right.
However, it's got to be something else. And if it's something else like disciplinary reasons, either that's the greatest coaching decision of all time or the worst coaching decision of all time.
Well,
and I'm not sure which way I stand on it.
Listen, I think it has to be a disciplinary reason. And I think to his credit, Bill Belichick said, no, it was a coach's decision. I don't think they wanted to hang Malcolm Butler out to dry. Doing that in that situation is a pretty big move on Bill Belichick's part, not to say, hey, it wasn't my decision. You know, it was the guy was missed curfew. And I don't know, with missed curfew, Trey, and you know this, and I was talking to Donald, the same thing. You don't know whether he missed curfew by 5 minutes or 5 hours.
Right, and you don't know how often.
That's right, and you don't know what other team rules he broke or what kind of atmosphere it is. But, you know, and I think if that was the case, which in my heart of hearts, I believe it was a disciplinary thing, and he was making a point because of the guy did something like that during Super Bowl week. Listen, if he did that and then said, no, it was just my decision, I'm not, and did not tell the truth or told it that, and let Malcolm Butler off the hook for being a guy who blew a curfew the night before. We've seen it happen in other years as well. You know, Eugene Robinson did it.
Stanley Wilson.
Stanley Wilson, and the center for the Raiders did it as well. It's happened before. The stress is incredible.
Let me ask you guys both this, okay? Because it's the last game of the year, and he's clearly one of your best two corners.
Exactly.
I mean, let's be honest, though. He is. Okay? He's one of the top two. And I get it. And there's some part of me that says if that's what the way it went down, wow, good for you, Bill. Way to hang on your principles and all that kind of stuff. But the other half of me says, hey, man, you're only going to have him for one more game. And if he's your best option out there, let's go win the freaking Super Bowl, and then you can cut him right afterward.
Right.
You know? I mean, Jimmy Johnson, as unfortunately, Steve, you all know for his time with the Cowboys, was very successful by saying, look, I'm going to treat everybody the same. But I want to treat everybody fair, but I won't treat them the same.
Right.
You know, there were players that got away with more because of who they were, and everybody understood that. And, you know, Brandon Browner, who went out there on Instagram and sort of went after Belichick, basically said, Bill has favorites and he doesn't have favorites. And little bro is what he called Malcolm Butler, was never one of his favorites. So, I mean, look, there's part of me is like, yeah, man, way to have your principles. But it's the freaking Super Bowl, man. You're trying to win one more game. Establish yourself as the first coach with six, and the Brady can have six, and you could go back to back for the first time since you guys did it, and win 3 out of 4 years. I mean, I don't know if I'm okay with that much principle. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Well, it is his eighth. It's not like he doesn't have any more that he can fall back on. But I also know this.
I agree.
Urban Meyer had a nice statement earlier in the week, and I read this that Urban Meyer had Bill Belichick in for a coach's clinic, and Bill off the Cuff said, you know, I'm at the point in my career. This is Bill Belichick talking at this coaching clinic on a Thursday in the offseason. He said, at this point in my career, I don't have to coach guys I don't like to coach or that aren't in it with me. I don't have to coach guys who I don't like. I don't have to coach guys or bring guys in that I'm not comfortable with. And that struck a chord with Urban Meyer. I mean, you recruit a kid that you really don't like or recruit a kid that you really think is going to be a problem in so many areas. Why recruit that kid? And for Bill Belichick, at this point in his career, there's no question, and he did it. He proved it with this decision with Malcolm Butler. I can make this decision because I have to live with myself, and I don't want my team. And I've got 52 other guys that may be back next year that are going to remember that I put up with it with Malcolm Butler the night before our biggest game.
Look, I hear that, and there's a lot of truth to that. But they've decided. I mean, they sort of decided to put up with Malcolm Butler anyway. Remember, they were going to trade him away for the start of the season. He was supposed to be part of that Brandon Cooks trade, and he didn't have to do that. And I think he was an unrestricted last year, right? Wasn't he? So they decided to bring him back. So,
right.
I believe me. If in a perfect world, I think what you're saying is absolutely true. And on some level, if that's the case, and we'll hope to find out if that's the case, I have all the respect for Belichick in the world, but as a player on that roster, when we have a chance to win, we're getting torched out there. I mean, there was only one punt in that game.
Yeah.
There was only one punt in that game. At some point, if you're the rest of that secondary, and, you know, outside of the offensive line, the secondary is the most tied-together unit on a football team.
Yeah.
And, okay, if I'm going over here, I know my job. Does this guy behind me know what he's supposed to be doing in this coverage when we see this formation from the offense? And you get a little concerned, and to me, I would look a little sideways at the coaching staff if I see Nick Foles marching us up and down the field, and all of a sudden, bang, one of our best corners, one of our arguably best defensive players, isn't there.
I mean, Trey, I've said this dude is the guy that every time they play the Steelers, they lock him up on Antonio Brown. And he does a very good job on Antonio Brown. So you can't tell me anything about matchups and any of that stuff in a game versus Alshon Jeffries and the rest of those receivers that he can't match up with any of these guys. Like, come on. I mean, it had to be something disciplinary. And there has to come a point in the Super Bowl where you're like you're both of you guys are saying, we're about to lose this game. Yeah. We can't shut them down. We need this kid out here. I can cut you after the – I don't want to deal with you. We'll worry about that after the game, but right now I need you to come out here and play.
The truth of the matter is it has to be a disciplinary action. It just occurred to me why is because he practiced all week, and he only found out right before the game. It was disciplinary.
Yeah, now there were some reports that he had a bad week of practice because he was sick.
Hey, he just found out he wasn't playing right before the game. Yeah, I think there was if he was surprised by it, I think there's a reason he was surprised by it. And it wasn't because of a bad week of practice.
Hey,
I agree with you, man.
Hey, Trey, so on the other side of the ball, Nick Foles now, 1 year left on his contract. You have to believe that there's so many teams that need quarterbacks. This dude just won Super Bowl MVP and threw dimes, just carved that defense up, carved up the Vikings defense the week before. You have to believe teams are trying to trade for Nick Foles. What should the Eagles do?
Look, we had a great discussion about this on our show, and I understand both sides of it, but to me, I do not let him go unless I get the most ridiculous over-the-top offer. And here's why. Carson Wentz is going to be the starting quarterback. We all know that. There's no controversy there. No matter what Nick Foles did, Carson Wentz, I believe, is going to be the starter. He tore up that knee, December 13th?
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah. It's going to be.
It was in December.
He ain't going to be in training camp.
That's correct. So you cannot let Nick Foles go until you know where you are with Carson Wentz. I think it's more likely that Foles may be traded before the trade deadline in October than he gets let go this offseason. Here's the other reason. Okay, the two of them combined, Wentz and Foles' cap number is under $15 million.
Right. Yeah, they can keep them both easy.
Yeah, 1.7.3, 1.7.6. There are 18 quarterbacks who have a higher cap number than that. 18. One of them is Mike Glennon, who's not even going to play next year in a perfect scenario
right.
for the Chicago Bears. So, look, I get the idea that you have a commodity that people want and they may give you something, but you have a quarterback who I know Phillip Rivers played in an AFC Championship game with a torn ACL against New England in 2007. I understand that. But Phillip Rivers isn't Carson Wentz. Half of Carson Wentz's game is mobility, movement, running, elusiveness. Okay, you can't rush him back. Look what happened when RG3 was all in to be back for week one 2013 season after tearing up his knee in 2012 in the playoff game against the Seattle Seahawks. He was never the same. And when you start to come back and rush, your mechanics are off, and then you hurt something else. To me, they have the ultimate insurance policy. And it kind of sucks for Foles because he could play somewhere. There's no question about it. But if I'm the Eagles, I hold all the damn cards, man. And I want to make sure that we are good with Wentz until I let that guy go.
And I think one of the things that you touched on, it's a good chance that Foles actually is able to start the season for the Eagles next year because
Absolutely.
Carson Wentz can't even – there's no reason to hurry him back. December – It's a 12 month injury before you can get back to even start actually going 100%, let alone 80%.
Especially when
Adrian Peterson ruined ACL rehab for everybody.
He did. But especially when you're a quarterback who somewhat does rely on mobility. You know, it's not like he's RG3 or even Tyrod Taylor, but you are a guy who truly likes to move around in the pocket, shed tacklers, all of that stuff, and make big throws. So you can't and we all know what the ACL is like. I mean, most guys aren't Adrian Peterson. Most guys, it takes 2 years before you really feel comfortable. So, yeah, I think it's smart for them to keep Nick Foles, especially when you're not paying a boatload of money for either one of these guys right now.
No, I mean, it may stink for Nick, but I think Nick, in one part of it, loves Philadelphia. I mean, one of the reasons he came back to play because he wanted to play for Andy Reid. In Kansas City. Well, who is Andy Reid's disciple? That would be Doug Peterson.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm kind of thinking he likes Philly just fine even right now, even if he didn't to begin with. Am I right?
You got that right, partner.
So, Trey, another quarterback who is going to be on the market, especially after the trade last week, and the Redskins bring over Alex Smith and then pay him a crazy amount of money, is Kirk Cousins. And where do you think Kirk Cousins lands for next year?
Well, it's interesting. Washington may even think about trying to put a franchise tag on him again, just to sort of like kick him one more time while he's down. But, I mean, you know, that way if they do that and they can work out a trade, then they get the compensation back, you know, when obviously he goes somewhere. But that also might scare people away from making that deal. So, look, Kirk is going to have a very wide variety of places where he can go play. There's no question about that. To me, one team that makes the most sense, and I don't know if they're going to put the money in on it, is Denver, because I think Denver, you know, Denver has the fifth overall pick in the draft, and yeah, a lot of people have drafting a quarterback there. But you know, this Denver defense is not getting any younger. Okay, they were really good in 2015 when they won Super Bowl 50, and they've missed the playoffs the last 2 years basically because of quarterback play. You know, they tried Paxton Lynch. They also drafted the Broctagon. I want to Brock with you, Brocky Top. Brock Osweiler. Let's stop drafting power forwards at quarterback. Let's just stop that. There's no 6'8 quarterback that's ever going to work. It's not going to happen. So I think that really an ideal landing spot for Kirk would be Denver, because that defense is there, and he can move the sticks unlike any quarterback they've had, really, quite frankly, since Peyton in 2013 or early 2014. I mean, even in 2015, you know, Peyton was not anywhere near what he was. He was 9 touchdowns, 17 interceptions. So I think Denver's a really interesting spot for him.
I think I agree with you, and it's interesting, too, that you mentioned that, you know, the Peyton, let's not forget Peyton Manning in Denver. They could have very well have gone to 3 or 4 of those Super Bowls. He was only there 4 years. Yeah. And they had that 1 year with him and Welker and those guys where they went to the Super Bowl and lost it to Seattle, where they got crushed. That offense was a juggernaut. And really, and it wasn't like Peyton was Cam Newton back there. I mean, they just moved. No. You couldn't get him off the field.
55 touchdown passes that year, my friend. 55.
Yeah. Hey, Trey, so when you look at the reports come out today, Josh McDaniels, the offensive coordinator for the Patriots, has now moved on to the Colts to be the head coach. And you look at now, he is coming over to pair up with an Andrew Luck. If Andrew Luck is fully healthy, how do you feel like Andrew Luck, as I would think Josh McDaniels will still want to call plays, how do you feel like he will fit into Josh McDaniels' offense?
Well, you know, he may want to call plays, and that's fine. The most important thing, I think, is Andrew Luck's health. Because, you know, what happened there, that surgery he had was the same when Herm was with us before he left us to go to Arizona State. He said he had Chad Pennington with the same injury, and that injury was a 12-month injury. You know, he had that surgery in January or February of last year. So we really just about now Andrew Luck should be getting healthy. And if Andrew Luck is healthy, then things change dramatically for that team. But Chris Ballard, the GM, has got to start putting more stuff around him right now, because there's not a lot of talent around Andrew Luck if he's healthy right now in Indianapolis.
Trey Wingo, thanks so much for joining us on the Subway Fresh Take Hotline. Really appreciate it. Enjoy your vacation.
Yeah.
You have earned it, my friend.
Mahalo, people. Mahalo.
All right, Trey, thanks very much. You're with Steve Tasker and Donald Jones on the John Murphy Show, presented by Napa Auto Parts, from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show.
Steve Tasker and Donald Jones in for John Murphy today on the John Murphy Show from One Bills Drive. If you want to give us a call, you can, 803-0550, outside Buffalo, toll-free, 1-888-550-2550, or at John Murphy Show on Twitter. We've taken a couple calls, although we've had some pretty good conversations, not to say anything about our callers, but we're going to talk about we had a true Buffalo NFL true-false. Let me see if I can find out how we're going to do this. Interesting topics. Did the Malcolm Butler benching split the locker room of the New England Patriots? Do you think that's true or false?
Did the Malcolm Butler benching split the locker room? I mean, I would have to believe at some – I'm going to go true on this. And I would have to think at some point in that game when – Nick Foles is roasting Rhodes. I can't remember that kid's first name. But when they are just carving him up and just going at him consistently. Like, in the beginning when Bill Belichick comes down and he's like, hey, you're not going to play, everybody's probably like, oh, man, we need him. But then when you get into the game, you have to think that the players are on the field like, yo, what's up, coach? Can you put him back in the game? We need him out here. He's been out here with us all year, and then you wait till the day of the Super Bowl. So, yeah, I'm going to go true on that.
Are you going to go true on that?
Yeah.
It's been reported that it did. Some of the former teammates who went back And
yeah,
I don't know though. I don't buy that really. Because believe me, I believe it was a disciplinary action.
Mm-hmm.
The guy was late for curfew.
Right.
Broke some other team rules allegedly. I don't know, whatever they are. I blame him, not Bill Belichick.
Yeah, you definitely blame him. But then you'd have to look at it like, well, everybody on that team knows he's probably not going to be there next year. Players.
Well, he ain't going to be there now.
Definitely not. But even if he didn't break any of those rules, it was evident last year that they didn't really want him. They brought him back. They put him – he was restricted. They put him on a first-round tender, right? So he made like $3 million this year or something like that. So it was evident that at some point you're probably going to move on, especially when you paid – Stephon Gilmore, that type of money. You're not going to pay him that right. type of money. So he was going to be out of the door. So it's the Super Bowl. This dude has been a key player for us in this defense, in the defensive backfield. We've been communicating with him all year. Now you want to bring somebody else in the Super Bowl?
I know, but still, I get that about he's not going to be there. But you know what? Great players have left that team more than any other team in the league.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, they say goodbye to good, solid players, and they sign guys that, you know, they make into stars, you know.
Yeah.
So it's that kind of atmosphere. So I don't think – saying goodbye to Malcolm Butler is going to divide that locker room. And especially, you know, if you did bench him and if you had good reason to it, I don't think it divided the locker room. I think that's a little bit of an overstatement. I think guys were bummed. And I think they were saying, listen, you put him in that, you know.
Yeah.
But listen, you know, if the guy ain't going to be there, if he's going to, you got to be there. You got to show up. You got to be on. You got to follow the rules.
Mm-hmm.
Let that be a lesson to you. All right. True or false number two. Did Matt Patricia and the hiring by the Detroit Lions lose its luster because he got spanked in the Super Bowl? His defense gave up all those yards.
Yeah.
It was a non-existent defensive struggle.
It really was. They couldn't stop Nick Foles. In that
nobody could stop anybody.
Yeah, nobody could stop anybody. No defense in that game. And if I'm Detroit, their personnel, their staff, you know, their front office, they're probably sitting there like, man.
It looks bad.
Because in their mind, they already had him. They announced him the next day. So they're sitting there and they're like, oh, all right, let's see if he can stop him. We already got who our guy is, but sheesh. I mean, this is not looking
good.
I
don't think that loses his luster.
Nah, not at all.
He's a guy. He's been doing it for a long time. He's been in three of the last four Super Bowls.
Yeah, this is false.
Won a couple of them. I mean,
last year he had the number one ranking defense.
Yeah.
So, I mean, this Super Bowl, and this has been a defense really all year that has been bend but don't break. They were top five in a lot of statistical categories.
They were handing out yards.
They couldn't stop the Eagles.
They were giving out yards like it was Christmas.
Right?
But here's the thing, what they did do, they, you know, you get them into a third and two, they get off the field a lot.
Right.
You get into they always get you to third down. You never get a first down on second down.
Yeah.
You got to go three downs to get a first down. And that's one of the crucial things. Yeah, you can get those yards.
Yeah.
And, you know, you saw the Eagles do it. They went for it a couple times on fourth and got both of them. One of them was the touchdown to Foles, obviously, on the fourth and one goal on the one. That was a phenomenal play. But the other one was Zach Ertz catching that little hitch route.
What?
In the
where
he jumped and pulled it out.
Mm-hmm.
Got the first down late in the game on the final drive on the Eagle 40-yard line. Oh, my gosh. And they went for it and got it.
Yeah.
But you still have to convert those things against this New England Patriot defense. So, no, I think that's a false. He didn't lose any of his luster. Right? So that's a false. All right.
Yeah.
Last one. The Giants' Super Bowl 42 win over the Patriots was not an upset.
The Giants, no. I'm going to go, it was not an upset.
2007 when they were 19-0?
That is false. I think it was an upset.
Huge upset. Are you joking?
We kind of go back and forth with these double negatives.
Yeah, yeah.
Sometimes
yeah.
that our producer likes to put in there.
He's grammatically unsound is what it is.
Yeah. But no, that's false. That was definitely an upset. I mean, that team was undefeated, and they nobody thought the Giants could go in there and beat them.
That's the one we're talking about, right? It's the Giants Super Bowl, right?
Yeah, the Giants Super Bowl with Randy Moss was on that team. They had the breakout season, and nobody thought that. Only the Giants probably. The Giants probably didn't even think they can go in there and beat them. They've said that, you know, playing them in the last – because they played them the last week of the season.
Right.
And they had a decent game. The Patriots still ended up winning that game. Going into the Super Bowl, I mean, the Giants were like 8-8 in the regular season. You know,
they're like 9-7 back into the playoffs.
Like they looked
horrible doing it. And,
right.
You know, it's like, okay, it's been, you know, they squeaked in. Good for them.
They squeaked
then
in.
Then they get hot and they go. But, yeah. So
that was definitely an upset.
Listen, that was an that was the upset of all time for me. That was unbelievable, that upset. Because that nobody was touching the Patriots that year.
Nobody.
That was an enormous upset. All right, the NFL True False is brought to you by Yancey Fancy, New York's Artisan Cheese. And come on, man. They were 19-1.
Yeah.
That was an up. The one was an upset.
And an unstoppable offense with Randy Moss still playing like Randy Moss.
That was it. Yeah. That team beats every other team in every other day.
Yeah. Yeah. And they probably beat the Giants any other day. It just so happened that day that they didn't pull it out in that game. But the Giants, Michael Strahan and the rest of those boys that were on that defensive line probably will say, man, they probably beat us any other day. We just got them that Sunday. Any given Sunday, anything can happen.
Oh,
but
yeah.
That's why, I mean, you have people make the argument of, you know, that's why they need to have more games than just one game, which is the Super Bowl. I mean, you can't do that in football. It's too many injuries.
Yeah.
But they always talk about, well, the NBA Finals is 7 games. It gives you a better chance to win it. You know, the real team actually comes out on top because it's a series, all of that stuff. Yeah, whatever. Super Bowl is win or go home, and all the right. Giants won that game.
We're going to take one more. All right, so this says Bob from Penfield's been holding for about 47 minutes. Bob, if you're still there, you're my hero. Bob, you got anything for us?
Yes, I'm still here. And first of all, thanks for taking my call.
Mm-hmm.
And, Steve, I'm a huge fan. I was a season ticket holder for 13 years during our Super Bowl years, so I really feel great talking to you.
I appreciate it.
I have a couple quick points to make. First of all, I was very disappointed last year when we were sitting at number 10 and we did not draft Deshaun Watson. I think he's going to be a superstar in this league. I get the fact we got Trey White, and that was a good pick, but I'm kind of reluctant now to give up some of our number one picks to move up because from what I've seen, and I've watched a lot of college football this year, I'm not sold on any of the top 5 quarterbacks. So I have a proposal. What I would love to see the Buffalo Bills do is make a trade with Philadelphia for the quarterback for Foles and give up one of our number ones because I think that's what it's going to take because, you know, the fact that he's very cheap, $7 million for next year. So I'm proposing we'd give up one of our number ones and Tyrod Taylor to Philadelphia because I think there's going to be a lot of competition for Foles.
Hmm.
And I think we're going to have to part with a number one in order to get him. So
you might be right, Bob, and I get that. I want to know this, Bob. Are you there, Bob?
Yep.
And I know it's easy to say that about Deshaun Watson. I mean, did you know about Deshaun Watson before the draft? Because it's easy to say after the draft that you know we should have taken Deshaun Watson because a lot of teams passed on Deshaun Watson. Mm-hmm.
Well, do you know what? Yes, I knew about him before the draft. Here, this guy knocked off Alabama, who's like a pro team in college, twice. And, you know, he was playing against the best competition and excelling. So I think the signs were there. And, you know, that's what makes me kind of not understand why some of the teams passed on him when they did. Because, you know, from what I saw, he was going to be a superstar in college.
Well, he was a superstar in college, no question. He did beat the highest level of competition. The problem is this. You never saw him do what an NFL quarterback has to do to win, and that's stand in the pocket and throw the football. And even in Houston, he broke contain, he runs around a little bit, and he made some plays, no question about it. But ultimately, he's going to have to learn to stand in the pocket and win games because I'll tell you what, right now, he got knocked around and he's injured because of his inability or his lack of desire to stand there in the pocket. He got hurt running around. Actually, he got hurt in a non-contact drill
in practice. Yeah.
So, I mean, so that's the question. Is he going to stay healthy enough as an athlete, which is the same question for every quarterback. It's the same question for Cam Newton, and Cam Newton has decided he doesn't like running around anymore either. That guy stands in the pocket now, too.
That.
He ran around. And Deshaun Kaiser in Cleveland, there's other athletes. Russell Wilson. Ultimately, he's got to stand in the pocket and make throws. And it's hard to translate that or transpose a college career. As impressive as Deshaun Watson's career was in college, and it was,
right.
And he played against the highest level that there is, you don't ever see him do stuff like a pro quarterback's got to do. And that's the issue with why teams shy away. They don't know if they can do it.
It's just so hard because most quarterbacks are like that coming out of college now, right? I mean,
yeah.
It's rare that these quarterbacks are playing in pro-style systems. The college game is not really, especially at the quarterback position, is not a farm system to the NFL in today's football. It's so much big business in college football itself. And those head coaches and those offensive coordinators, defensive coordinators, especially the offensive side with the quarterbacks, getting paid so much money, they're getting paid to win games. And this is how we win games. We recruit these athletes and we put them in this offense, and it's so much space in the college game to just run around and make plays when you have an athlete like Deshaun Watson or Lamar Jackson or one of these guys, RG3, right. Cam Newton, one of these guys.
Right, right.
You can run around and make plays. I'm not trying to prep you for the NFL. I'm trying to win games here so that I can make more money and keep my job. You know, so you have so many college quarterbacks like that where, and I think Bob is still on the phone, but you have so many teams like that. You don't have many quarterbacks running pro-style systems in today's football.
What scares me that the Bills may give up their two number ones to move up in the draft, because I don't see it. I don't see any of the top five quarterbacks being that superstar that's worth two first-round draft picks.
Well, I'll tell you this, and you're right, Bob, no question about it. And here's the thing. If they don't see it, they won't do it either. And that's one of the things that we've seen. They are willing to make some really difficult decisions about some really good players. I don't see this regime and Brandon Bean and Sean McDermott throwing a house or a boatload of picks and assets and money and people just to get up to get a guy who may be a coin flip at best to be any good. I do think, though, they are going to move, and they're going to try and build their team further than what they have already, which they've done a great job of it. We've seen it. They're going to make a lot of moves, and a result of those moves are going to be they're going to have a guy that's going to be plugged in at quarterback, whether it's going to be a rookie first-year guy or whether it's going to be a guy like Nick Foles where they decide to jump up and grab him if they can. And after talking to Trey Wingo on the phone, and he made a great point. Carson Wentz didn't get hurt in week 5 or 6 like Deshaun Watson did. He got hurt in December. And it's a 12-month – even if it's a 9-month injury, you're still into September, October, before you can even get back on the field and practice. Mm-hmm. So the Eagles need Nick Foles to stay right where he's at, because he's going to be playing games for them early in the season next year. And if you think you're going to pry him out of there – what are the Eagles going to do?
Right.
Because Carson is not going to be ready to play early in the season next year.
And like Bob was just saying, you trade Tyrod Taylor. I don't think the Eagles are going to give away Nick Foles when you're only paying him $7 million. You're going to trade him away.
You're going to trade Tyrod Taylor's making 15 or whatever. You're going to try and get him to, you know, take a pay
cut? Right. And he's been 31st in passing see that happening. Look, I'd say this. I wouldn't be shocked if, and this is going to really tick Bills fans off, if the Bills, first of all, I don't think they're going to move up. I just don't think it's going to happen. I wouldn't be shocked if that first one, number 20, because they have 20 and 21, if that first one, they actually trade back because they have the 21st pick. So with the first one, they trade back into the second round to pick up more picks.
Right.
And then just draft somebody else, if it's a quarterback or whatever it is, with that 21st pick, and then have a boatload of picks in the second round. I wouldn't be shocked if there's a team that calls them and says, we want to trade up to get this guy. And, you know, they can work it where they start to put pressure on the team. A team trades up to 20. The Bills trade back out of that spot. And Bills fans are going to be like, what are you doing?
But they're
trying to get some more picks in the second round.
Here's my thought about that. Hard to see a team moving from anywhere, wherever, up to 21. I mean, 21, by the time you get to 21, it's like, you don't know who everybody's going to take, because there's been some move, like we both agree, there's going to be some movement at the top of the draft. So somebody's either going to drop out and drop back and then trade back in or whatever. But at 21, 22, you're right. You can get the guy you want.
Yeah.
And if trade one of those picks, but who's going to want to go from whatever 34th overall or 52nd overall up to 21? There must be a guy. When you get down to the 20 picks, I don't know that anybody's going to trade up to get there. Although the Chiefs, so it's interesting because this is a huge gray area, because you think the Bills are going to trade back possibly. And I think, everything's possible with this crew.
Yeah.
No question. Sean McDermott, Brandon Bean, you proved it last year. But I still think it's likely they trade up. But what we don't know is which quarterback they're going to sign off the free agent market.
Right.
I think that's a huge possibility. And a trade is a huge possibility for a guy like Foles or whatever. They signed Case Keenum. They signed Sam Bradford. They signed Teddy Bridgewater. You name it. there's three of those guys on that team that are all free agents.
Mm-hmm.
I have no idea what they're going to do. Because I don't even know what you and I would do. All right, here with Steve Tasker and Donald Jones on the John Murphy Show, presented by Napa Auto Parts from One Bills Drive. We'll come back for our final segment right after this.
This is the John Murphy Show on Buffalo Bills Radio.
And now, what have we learned from today's show?
What have we learned? Brought to you by Advanced Alarm, the preferred alarm and home theater provider of the Buffalo Bills. We had a couple of guests on. Really, that's basically what we learned today. You didn't learn anything from us, probably. But we had James Lofton in the show just after 1 o'clock, and he said on his experience as a Hall of Fame selector. Here's what he had to say.
It's interesting. We started at over 120. We went down to 25. Then we went to 15. And when you look at that list of 25, you look at it and go, wow.
Yeah.
We're only going to pick five of these guys.
Right, right.
And trying to do that is a daunting task. And I always walk out of the room, and I'm happy for what we've done, but I'm also just a little, not bewildered, but a little disappointed that we couldn't get everybody in because there are so many deserving players.
And then, as James Long, it was interesting talk to James because players have usually never been in that conversation. And now James Lofton, along with Dan Fouts, have voices and full votes in there. We also had Trey Wingo on the show, the Patriots losing both coordinators. Is that going to be a huge problem for them? And here's what Trey had to say about that.
The last time that Belichick lost both coordinators off his staff at the same time was 2005. And that was after they had beaten of all teams, the Eagles, in the Super Bowl, Super Bowl 39. And they didn't win another Super Bowl for 10 years. Now, they made it to a couple. You know, they lost to the Giants in Super Bowls 42 and 46. But, you know, it's going to take an adjustment. And there may be coaches from that coaching staff that either go with Josh to Indy or go with Matt to Detroit. So there's going to be a significant amount of turnover on the coaching staff for the Patriots. That being said, one thing we've known for sure is the best and most important coach on the Patriots coaching staff is the one that's not going anywhere, we don't think.
What have we learned? Brought to you by Advanced Alarm, the preferred alarm and home theater provider to the Buffalo Bills. Well, those are the stuff we did learn. One thing we didn't learn, did you see the halftime show?
I did. I mean, for me, I'm a big Bruno Mars fan.
So nothing stacks up to Bruno.
But they lit that city purple. It was great.
That was pretty cool.
Yeah.
You know, it's interesting. The last halftime show I saw live was Beyonce in New Orleans.
And she killed it.
She killed it.
She killed something else.
Yeah, she killed the lights is what happened. She did that show, and then halftime started after that, and the lights went out, and there I was.
And SNL did – now, you talked to us in the other room about you didn't really get any text messages that night, but you did a week later because SNL, Saturday Night Live, did a spoof of you. I think we have that spoof. We have sound.
Now, for another update on the situation, we throw it back down to our own Steve Tasker, who's on the sidelines. Steve?
Well, not much new to report, JB. The lights went out, and now they're trying to get them back on. Some players are stretching. Some are not. And as a favor, I'd like to ask you not to come back to me, because I have nothing to add. Back to you, JB.
All right. Well, thanks, Steve.
First of all, the JB with his hairline, that was hilarious.
Great. Oh, it's great.
That's great. It's just like his hairline.
Yeah, that. Listen, I was on live. You know, the lights go out. They come to me live because I was the only guy that had a live mic and had IFB. I knew that I could talk to the truck. 110 million people live. Everybody I ever knew and ever will know was watching the game. And my phone, nothing. It was crickets. Nobody texted me, say, hey, nice job. Wow, that must have been tough. After the game, nothing. It was like I was by myself. You know. A week later, when this spoof comes on, my phone blows up. I'm laying in bed that night, and my phone's going up. You're famous. You made it. I'm like, what? Saturday Night Live spoofed you.
That's like
nobody cared about the game.
You know, I got hit really hard by Vince Wilfork, and nobody hit me up when I got hit or any of that stuff. It ends up on WorldStar.com, and everybody's like, "Yo, you on WorldStar? You're famous." Yeah, and I'm like, "Come on, I don't want to see that. I don't care about being on WorldStar, man."
It happened on live TV. Did you not see it? Thanks, bro.
Thanks for watching. Yeah.
Oh, exactly. Well, been great seeing you, man. Tomorrow,
you're
in with Chris Brown. You're going to do the show with him.
And I'm going to do the show with him.
Murph's on vacation, so
you'll have some grandkids.
Yeah, I've got duty. Me and Rosie are going to be out and about. Yeah, it's going to be
by yourself.
Awesome. By myself. I can do it.
I mean, you've had some kids, so I'm sure you can do it.
This is less exhausting, I'll tell you that right now.
Do you just give them everything? Do you give everything?
Absolutely.
That is horrible.
That's what
a
grandpa's made to do. Yeah. Donald Jones, thanks for being here. Appreciate everybody out there listening. John Murphy Show presented by Napa Auto Parts from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio. We'll see you tomorrow, everybody. Donald will. I'll be around later on in the week, maybe in the next couple of weeks too. Mm-hmm. Whatever. I'll be back.
You'll be back.
All right, bro. Take care, everybody. We'll see you later.